Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, July 1st, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250. Our access code is 449-389-pound. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find the banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please donate and support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, pick up where we left off last week, John chapter 20. Okay, last week we were reading in John chapter 20, and we ended up in verse 18, and we were reading about the resurrection and the appearance of Jesus to Mary Magdalene. So we're going to pick up on verse 19 and read through verse 31. Then the same day at evening, being the first day of the week, when the doors were shut, where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews, came Jesus and stood in the midst of them, and said unto them, Peace be unto you. And when he had so said, he showed unto them his hands and his side. Then were the disciples glad when they saw the Lord. Then said Jesus to them again, Peace be unto you. As my Father hath sent me, even so send I you. And when he had said this, he breathed on them, and saith unto them, Receive ye the Holy Ghost. Whosoever sinneth ye remit, they are remitted unto them. And whosoever sin ye retain, they are retained. But Thomas, one of the 12, called Didymus, was not with them when Jesus came. The other disciples therefore said unto him, We have seen the Lord. But he said unto them, Except I shall see in his hands and print of the nails, and put my fingers into the print of the nails, and thrust my hand in his side, I will not believe. And after 8 days again his disciples were within, and Thomas with them. Then came Jesus, the doors being shut, and stood in the midst, and said, Peace be unto you. Then said he to Thomas, Reach hither thy finger, and behold my hands, and reach hither thy hand, and thrust it into my side, and be not faithless, but believing. And Thomas answering, and said unto him, My Lord and my God. Jesus saith unto him, Thomas, because thou hast seen me, thou hast believed. Blessed are they that have not seen, and yet have believed. And many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written, that ye might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing ye might have eternal life through his name. Okay, Gospel of John. We're reading from chapter 20, verses 19 through 31. Okay, tonight's topic we're going to be looking at is National Liberty Alliance's solution, which of course focuses in on consent of government. If anybody wants to get into the queue, and now's a good time, there's only one person in the queue right now, star 6, to get into the queue, and I believe they'll be told to hit a 1. So star 6 and a 1 to get into the queue. But first we're going to look a little bit at NLA's plan. National Liberty Alliance's plan. John Adams said, Liberty once lost is lost forever. The solution? Government by consent. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them that seems most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Declaration of Independence. If the people do not have a fundamental knowledge and personal control of the following concepts, they cannot have liberty. 1. Authority. 2. Jurisdiction. 3. Property. 4. Morality. 5. Spirituality. 6. Justice. 7. Domestic tranquility. 8. General welfare. 9. Natural law. 10. Legislative powers. 11. Executive powers. 12. Judicial powers. 13. Law and equity. 14. Republic. 15. Real money. And 16. Political. If the people are ignorant to the Constitution, how can they know if their government servants are ignoring it? If our government servants are ignorant to the Constitution, did they lie when they took their oath to serve and protect the Constitution? If our elected and appointed servants need to consult a bar attorney who specializes in statutes and has zero knowledge of the Constitution, what does that have to say about the state of our union? Who's really running the show? It's not what we don't know that gets us in trouble. It's what we are convinced that we do know that's not true that will injure us. People have an ignorant belief that liberty is the freedom to choose, while they are unaware that our daily choices are irrelevant, while relevant choices are stacked both politically and judicially. In fact, liberty is freedom from all law except that of nature's God. There's nothing more dangerous than a closed mind. Karl Popper said, "True ignorance is not the absence of knowledge, but the refusal to acquire it." Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Nothing in this world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance and consciousness stupidity." It is impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. President JFK said, "A revolution is coming, a revolution which will be peaceful if we are wise enough, compassionate if we care enough, successful if we are fortunate enough. But a revolution which is coming, whether we will it or not, we can affect its character. We cannot alter its inevitability." We consent to government by binding our government servants down with the chains of the Constitution. This is simply accomplished by exercising the following two unalienable rights necessary for the preservation of liberty, aforementioned as freedom from all law except that of nature's God. 1. We the people can control 100% of our political process by participating in the elections of the free and independent committeemen, who will require the candidates' knowledge of and obedience to the Constitution, and will remove them from office if they are in bad behavior by using their unalienable right to recall. Proper exercising of this unalienable right will result in the election of the true statesmen that will serve the people instead of themselves. 2. We the people can control 100% of our legislators and judiciary by either participating in the administration of the juries or responding to the call to the jury assembly. Proper exercising of this unalienable right will result in just court decisions and prevent the exercising of unlawful legislation via an unalienable right of nullification, and will prevent unjust governments' accusations against we the people. The United States Constitution Preamble. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Some people might say, I didn't participate, so how can we claim the Constitution gives my consent? We need to go back to the Federalist Papers, which are a series of 85 essays arguing in support of the United States Constitution. Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay were the authors behind the thesis, and the three men wrote collectively under the name of Publius. 77 of the essays were published as a series in the Independent Journal, the New York Packet, and the Daily Advertiser between October of 1787 and August 1788. They weren't originally known as the Federalist Papers, but just the Federalist. The final eight were added later. In 1789, the population of the United States was about 3.9 million. Obviously, 3.9 million people could not debate and participate in our Constitution, which was ratified by our state legislators, who were elected by the represented the will of the people, who fought for independence and participated by following the published arguments, Federalist and Anti-Federalist essays. To quote Thomas Jefferson, "We in America do not have government by the majority. We have government by the majority who participate." So as our founding fathers stated in the preamble, they secured the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Therefore, being responsible statesmen, friends, neighbors, countrymen, and parents, wanting the best for their children and their children's children, they, by the blessings of God, produced mankind's most significant document, second only to the Bible, written by men as God the Holy Spirit inclined them. The Constitution has only 4,543 words, including the signatures. The Bill of Rights has only 462 words. The Declaration of Independence has 1,458 words. And yet a supermajority of the people, including public servants, are totally ignorant of their content and meaning. It is extremely disturbing that the people are so ignorant of their blessings of liberty, which has allowed our justice system to become unjust. Thomas Jefferson, the man who discovered the American freedom formula, warned us that the formula for freedom could be lost in one generation, and so it has. Jefferson said, "If a union expects to be ignorant and free, in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. An enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise the oversight. It is therefore imperative that the Union see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. Educate and inform the whole mass of the people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty." In the United States history, anti-federalists were those who opposed the development of a strong federal government and the ratification of the Constitution in 1788, preferring instead for power to remain in the hands of the state and local governments. Federalists wanted a stronger national government and the ratification of the Constitution to help proper manage the debt and tension followed by the American Revolution. Formed by Alexander Hamilton, the Federalist Party, which existed from 1792 to 1824, was the culmination of American federalism and the first political party in the United States. John Adams, the second president of the United States, was the first and only Federalist president. Those who identified with federalism as part of a movement were the main supporters of the Constitution. They were added by a Federalist sentiment that had gained traction across many factions, uniting political figures. However, this does not mean that there was no heated debate over the Constitution's drafting. The most zealous anti-federalists, loosely headed by Thomas Jefferson, fought against the Constitution's ratification, particularly those amendments which gave the federal government fiscal and monetary powers. A sort of ideological war raged between the two factions. resulting in the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, a series of essays written by various figures, some anonymously, some not, for and against the ratification of the United States Constitution. Ultimately, Anti-Federalists greatly influenced the document, pushing for strict checks and balances and certain limited political terms that would keep any one branch of the federal government from holding too much power for too long. The Bill of Rights, the term used for the first 10 amendments of the Constitution, are especially about personal, individual rights and freedoms. These were included partly to satisfy the Anti-Federalists. The Constitution, including its foundational document, the Declaration of Independence, and its capstone, the Bill of Rights, was a well-thought-out and debated masterpiece built around unalienable rights and truly frees man to be what he was born to be, free and independent. Just laws. Government by consent necessitates that people have control of our judicial, legislative, administrative powers and political processes. This can only be achieved and maintained by just laws, can only derive from the laws of nature's God, and not men. Evidently, only a virtuous people are capable of freedom, and as a nation becomes corrupt and vicious, they have more needs of masters. Religion and morality are the essential pillars of civil society. We have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions, unbridled by morality and religion. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. Therefore, to avoid the extremes of despotism or anarchy, the only grounds of hope must be on the morals of the people. Religion is the only solid base of morals, and morals are the only possible support of free governments. Therefore, education should teach the precepts of religion and the duties of man towards God. True religion and good morals are the only solid foundations of public liberty and happiness. It is hereby earnestly recommended to the several states to take the most effectual measures for the encouragement thereof. In a latter half of the 18th century, the people formed committees of safety throughout the colonies by which the American Revolution was born. These committees filled vacancies for the Continental Congress and that served as the governing body of the United States during the American Revolution, that eventually gave birth to our republic by ordaining and establishing the Constitution that governs our government. These committees of safety, after the birth of our nation, morphed into the committeemen who were elected within their election districts for a 2-year term. These committeemen would interview candidates to fill political vacancies and then circulate petitions within their respective election districts to nominate them on the ballots for the primary elections, at which time the people voted for their candidates of choice to run in the election to fill these political vacancies. These committeemen, when necessary, circulated petitions within their election district to recall elected officials when they were in bad behavior. The term bad behavior in the Constitution is when elected servants fail to honor their oaths. The committeeman process empowered the people at the grassroots to have full power of choice of their candidates for political office and to remove servants who failed to honor their oaths. This was the political exercise of government by consent, until, as George Washington had warned, a small but artful and enterprising minority of cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men subverted the power of the people, usurping for themselves the reins of government, putting in place of the delegated will of the nation the will of a party, thereby obstructing an execution of the law and destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted them up to the unjust dominion through unconstitutional statutes. Likewise, the grand and petit juries also empowered the people to have government by consent through the removal of elected or appointed government servants who violated their oaths by way of indictment when Congress fails to do their duty to correct the problem via impeachment. The trial jury, through the power of nullification, could also override any legislation that they believed violated the unalienable rights of the people. until a tsunami of bar attorneys and judges who have been taught to serve the will of the bar first, the will of the state second, and occasionally, if there is no conflict with the first two, their lulled-to-sleep client. These robotic attorneys question nothing, ignore the law of the land, enforce repugnant statutes, become lawless judges, have seized total control of our juries, and have trodden our Constitution underfoot. The combination of these four unalienable rights of we the people that ordained the power vested in themselves being, number one, the author of the law of the land, number two, the committeeman, number three, grand jurist, and number four, trial jurist, is the true expression of government by consent of the governed, that we the people declared by a declaration of independence, ordained by a constitution, and ensured by resolve a bill of rights. This is what we the people, through the unified United States common law grand jury, are determined to reinstate at all costs, and only then, by consent of we the people, will America be great again. Jurisdiction and authority. In 1776, our founding fathers set the cornerstone of our republic by proclaiming all just powers and the people under common law, also known as natural law, and not the laws of men, as is with other republics. And by calling upon nature's God, entitled us to his unalienable rights, thereby creating a covenant between we the people and our Creator that cannot be broken but by his wrath. We need only look to our founding documents and our common law history to learn how the people can be restored to power. The common law demands that we the people stop thinking like the slaves that we were and start thinking as the free men we were meant to be. This requires a maturity within us to educate ourselves via Jefferson's suitable education that will give us a true understanding of liberty, again being free from man's law, to accept the responsibility for our own actions and to recognize and acknowledge the rights of others to exercise liberties that we may or may not agree with. This maturity is both a stumbling stone that many fall upon because of ignorance and a prerequisite to understanding and exercising true liberty. The attitude that we need the state to restrain people's behavior is repugnant to God and is precisely what placed America's liberty in jeopardy in the first place. This was a direct assault upon our Bill of Rights, enabling the construction of a statutory prison which has enslaved us all. We have never stopped sinning by passing laws, and in the same way, we are not going to take great moral ideals and achieve it merely by law. Dwight D. Eisenhower. It is here where a proper education and a moral compass plays their role. Thomas Jefferson said, "I prefer dangerous freedom over peaceful slavery." Liberty demands that we do not permit the state to legislate our behavior. We the people, by the power and the authority vested in us by God, ordained the Constitution for the United States of America, therein creating three branches of governments, whose only commission is to accomplish six prime directives. Number one, to form a more perfect union. Number two, to establish justice. Number three, to ensure domestic tranquility. Number four, to provide for the common defense. Number five, to promote the general welfare. And number six, to secure the blessings of liberty. Any legislative, administrative, or judicial action at any level of government that does not accomplish or support one or more of the aforesaid directives is without authority, and thereby null and void. The Declaration of Independence being the foundation of all law, the Constitution being the framework of all government authority and jurisdiction, and its capstone Bill of Rights being the judge of all government acts, is the law of the land and is not to be violated. These founding documents clearly define the order by which all authority flows. Number one, laws of nature's God. Number two, laws of we the people. And number three, lawful acts of government. Any act of legislation, administration, or judicial that cannot trace its authority back to the Constitution is an unlawful act and the proper remedy against any such act is nullification. The highest authority is the sovereign governor of the universe, the creator of all things, and whose jurisdiction is eternal, and even the very souls of man. In Isaiah 45:5-12, nature's God said, I am the Lord, and there is none else. There is no God beside me. I girded thee, though thou hast not known me, that they may know from the rising of the sun and from the west that there is none beside me. I am the Lord, and there is none else. I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. Drop down, ye heavens, from above, and let the skies pour down righteousness. Let the earth open, and let them bring forth salvation, and let the righteous spring up together. I, the Lord, have created it. Woe unto him that striveth with his Maker. Let the potsherd strive with the potsherds of the earth. Shall the clay say to him that fashioned it, What makest thou? Or, Thy work, he hath no hands? Woe unto him that saith unto his father, What begettest thou? Or, to the woman, What hast thou brought forth? Thus saith the Lord, the Holy One of Israel, and his Maker, Ask me things to come concerning my sons, and concerning the works of my hands. Command ye me. I have made the earth, and created man upon it. I, even my hands, have stretched out the heavens, and all their hosts have I commanded. In the beginning, Genesis chapter 1, verses 26-31, nature's God vested man with the authority over his creation, saying, Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the seas, and over the fowls of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, Be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowls of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. And God said, Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed, which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. And it was so, and God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. In 1776, we the people, via America's foundational documents, the Declaration of Independence, covenant with nature's God, acknowledging his jurisdictions, laws, and entitlements in return. In 1889, we the people, by the aforesaid authority vested in us by God, ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America, which is the law of the land, where we said, preamble to the Constitution, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure the domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, did and do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Therefore, considering the covenant, authorities, and jurisdiction this republic is founded upon, it is of no surprise to us today that God raised up a type of Osiris in President Trump to bring judgment upon the evildoers operating in the mire that has seized control of his city on the hill. Thomas Jefferson echoed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just and that his justice cannot sleep forever. And God promised that judgment would come in the fullness of time. In Isaiah 14:21-27, where he said, Prepare the slaughter for his children, that's Satan's children, for the iniquity of their fathers, that they do not rise, nor possess the land, nor fill the face of the world with their cities, that's the New World Order. For I will raise up against them, saith the Lord of hosts, and cut off from Babylon the name and the remnant and the sons and the nephew, saith the Lord, I will make also make it a possession for the bitten and pools of water. I will sweep it as with a broom of destruction, saith the Lord of hosts. The Lord of hosts hath sworn, saying, surely as I have thought, so shall it come to pass, and as I have purposed, so shall it stand, that I will break the Assyrian in my hand, and upon my mountains tread him underfoot. Then shall his yoke depart from off them, and his burden depart from them and off their shoulders. This is the purpose that is purposed upon the whole earth, and this is the hand that is stretched out upon all nations. For the Lord of hosts hath purposed, and who shall disannul it? And his hand is stretched out, and who shall turn it back? Before the mountains were brought forth, or even thou hast formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. There God is sovereign, the author and the source of law and nature. In America, we the people vested by God are sovereign, and the author and sources of the law of the land. Sovereignty means that the decree of the sovereign makes the law, and foreign courts, also known as statutory courts, cannot condemn, influence, or persuade the sovereign to make the decree. The people of this state, as the successors of its former sovereign, are entitled to all the rights which formerly belonged to the king by his prerogative, and the state cannot diminish the rights of the people. Supreme sovereignty is in the people, and no authority can, or any pretense whatsoever, be exercised over the citizens of this state, but such as or shall be derived from and granted by the people of the state. We the people ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America. We the people vested Congress with statute-making powers. We the people defined and limited that power of statute-making. We the people limited lawmaking powers to ourselves alone. We the people did not vest the judiciary with lawmaking powers to control our behaviors. In common law courts of justice, we the people are the judicial tribunal, having attributes and exercising functions independently of the person of the magistrate designed generally to hold it, and proceeding according to the course of natural law. The constitutions of most of our states assert that the power is inherited in the people, and that they may exercise it by themselves in all cases to which they think themselves competent. As in electing their functionaries, executive and legislators, and deciding by the jury of themselves both fact and law, in all judiciary cases which any fact is involved. In our republic, it is not lawful for the government to exercise power without authority and jurisdiction to exercise that power. In law, authority gives permission and control over the defined jurisdiction. In America, the people are sovereign and have authority over their created government. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign makes the law. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to the legislative laws, for it is the author and source of law. But in our system, where sovereignty
I lost it, John. John, we don't hear you. Unless I lost signal. John? John?
All right, can you hear me?
Yep, you just got back right there.
All right, I've been having a lot of problems tonight. The board's been popping off on me, and I guess I lost my volume voice also. Let me see where I might have been. Let me take a look and go back a little bit.
But in our republic, the sovereign.
Okay, in our republic, it is not lawful. Is that pretty much where I was?
But in our republic, the sovereign.
Okay, but in our public, the sovereign. Let me go back and look. All right, well, let me pick up in this paragraph here. In our republic, it is not lawful for government to exercise power without authority and jurisdiction to exercise that power. In law, authority gives permission and control over a defined jurisdiction. In America, the people are sovereign and have authority over their created government. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign makes the law. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to legislative law, for it is the author and source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of governments, sovereignty itself remains with the people, by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. And the law is defined, and the law is the definition and limitation of that power. Right to self-governance. The unalienable right of the sovereign people to self-governance was ordained by God through a covenant between the people and their God via the Declaration of Independence, where we the people assumed among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations to which the laws of nature and the nature's God entitled us. Whereas common law governs all men, and we the people via the Constitution are the authority of all law. And when such a servant government suppresses the people and robs them of their sovereignty, it is the right of the people to alter or remove tyrants via recall or indict them or abolish it via self-enforcement and, if necessary, under the Amendment 2. We the people will surrender to none but God. When in the course of human events it became necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the cause which impel them to the separation. God's covenant is eternal and cannot be broken on behalf of another. This law is called common law because it is common unto all men, or natural law because it is innate, written in the hearts of men. Thereby, the authority vested in we the people, instituted by decree in our Constitution, created a republican form of government to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. We the people, through this Constitution, empowered elected and appointed servants to guard the same. The Constitution cannot be altered or abolished by the legislative servants who took an oath to protect it. Any judge who does not comply with his oath to the Constitution for the United States wars against the Constitution and engages in acts in violation of the supreme law of the land. The judge is engaged in acts of treason. We the people are free and independent sovereign people with the unalienable right of due process and with no contract with any administrative or foreign court. Thereby we owe the state nothing and are under no obligation that would require the people to seek leave from any servant who has no jurisdiction or authority over we the people. We are not subjects of the state, but the masters thereof. It is the public policy of this state that public agencies exist to aid in the control of the people's business. The people of this state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. At the Revolution, the sovereignty devolved on the people, and they are truly the sovereigns of the country, but they are sovereigns without subject, with none to govern but themselves. Any servant who resists these truths, war against the governor of the universe, war against the Constitution, and wars against the people. Any judge who does not comply with his oaths to the Constitution of the United States wars against that Constitution and engages in those acts in violation of the supreme law of the land. The judge is engaged in acts of treason. The solution, National Liberty Alliance's plan. Thomas Jefferson said, an enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. The purpose of National Liberty Alliance is to facilitate and organize the organization, communications, and the education for the administration of common law juries across the nation. NLA was founded in 2014 to facilitate a constitutional education concerning government by consent and the concept of liberty and to provide a platform for the people to communicate and organize at the grassroots level, as well as on a national level. NLA teaches its members to become active in both the political and judicial processes, vowing an oath to God, and to proceed with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. The author of this book is a founding member and attributes his pursuits for knowledge concerning liberty to this organization, and therefore encourages the reader to join and become active in their communities in our political and judicial processes. While it is true that President Trump is doing an amazing job dismantling the evil works of the deep state and its new world order behind it, this is not a time to become complacent, because only we the people can save our republic. Without the support of the people behind President Trump, he cannot be successful. Furthermore, we cannot have liberty and justice for all without having a government by consent. And that requires the sacrifice of some of our time and money. As Thomas Jefferson said, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. And we in America do not have government by the majority. We have government by the majority who participates. To date, National Liberty Alliance has organized with 9 national coordinators, 111 federal district leaders, 91 state coordinators, 1,397 county organizers, and a membership of approximately 7,500 people, poised to take control at the grassroots level when the aforesaid swamp is drained. To date, we have 1,076 grand jury administrators preparing to fill the 12,500-plus seats, these are full-time paid positions, across the nation, required to take back our judiciary. We will need at least 6 people to become elected committeemen in each county to take back and maintenance our political process. These committeemen can relieve the corrupt, unelected county leadership and take control of all the unelected committeemen who think that they are elected, to free them from the party bosses and empower them with the true meaning of liberty and free elections. Committeemen are the people on the grassroots level who nominate the candidates to be on the ballot for the elections and monitor the process to ensure honest elections. Presently, all these positions are under the control of the deep state. We need 4 people in each county to become jury administrators to fill about 15,000 full-time paid positions across our nation. These administrators will be responsible for orientating the juries when called, act as an investigative body for the grand jury when called, assist the jury in the writing of true bills, and prevent the officers of the court from abusing, stacking, and tainting these juries. NLA Declaration. We the people of the United States of America, by the mercy and grace of God, having blessed the people with the unalienable right of self-rule by impaneling juries secured by the 5th, 6th, and 7th Amendments of the Bill of Rights, in order to establish justice, ensure the domestic tranquility, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, by the securing of natural law for a perpetual administration of trust on behalf of the people. NLA Communications. NLA sponsors weekly national conferences, calls to provide updates, open forums, instructions, education, organization, and information to the people. United we stand, and divided we shall fall. NLA's Education. NLA offers a free civics course covering American history, 28 great ideas that changed the world, U.S. Constitution, common law, trial by jury, how America lost her way, individualism versus collectivism, and the Founding Fathers' convictions concerning religious principles, political precepts, economic fundamentals, and long-range social goals. NLA offers a free civics course and a government by consent course to all NLA supporting members that donate $5 a month or more. This course covers an in-depth understanding of the law, our judicial and political process, our founding documents, court access, jury administration, and how to take back control of our out-of-control government and return to government by consent. Training. NLA provides on-the-job training for the administration of the juries. We are now training people to fill those four administrative full-time paid positions for each county. All positions are on-the-job training. An NLA's free civics course and government by consent course is required for all those interested in the position of administrator at nationallibertyalliance.org. We are seeking to fill approximately 15,000 positions in approximately 3,100 counties. Salaries range from $48,000 to $96,000, a yield calculated by experience. Organization. NLA has assisted the people in all 50 states to establish a leadership and unify every county in the state by reconstituting the common law grand juries. This was accomplished by press releases in each county, inviting the people of each county to come together to agree and declare a return to the common law juries. We are still helping to establish leadership, memberships, and administrators in every county. Four jury administrators. We have established from the Magna Carta, paragraph 61, that there must be a minimum of four administrators per county. More may be required for the more densely populated counties, and one skilled legal secretary per county. Principles and maxims. Administrators will not establish rules, nor will there be any chairman, but will be ruled by a vow to God to adhere to the three principles and two maxims. Anyone who acts outside of the principles is in dishonor and must correct themselves or resign. It is the duty of the other three administrators to remove anyone who breaks their oath and refuses correction. It would be a wrongdoing to continue with a person who breaks their oath. If a disagreement comes about, a majority of the four or more always rules. If a disagreement becomes a stalemate, administrators ought to agree on a bordering county to decide. If the administrators cannot agree on a county, draw lots. Maxim. An established principle or proposition, a principle of law universally admitted as being a correct statement of the law or as agreeable to natural reasoning. Coke defines a maxim to be conclusion of reason granted without proof, argument, or discourse. Administrator's vow. I vow to ensure that all public servants uphold our founding documents and to carry out all my deliberations under natural law, principled under justice, honor, and mercy, and to strictly adhere to the following two legal maxims. Every right, when withheld, must have a remedy, and every injury in its proper redress. And, in the absence of a victim, there can be no crime, corpus delicti, and the state cannot be the victim. Justice. Justice and virtue are synonymous. Virtue comes from the knowledge of God. Through virtue, we develop patience, temperance, godliness, brotherly kindness, and charity. Administrators' duties. The four administrators are the investigative body of the grand jury and write prescriptions for public servants and agencies when they violate the people. They receive complaints from the people and endeavor to solve them. They arbitrate if both parties agree. They call and impanel grand and trial juries. They provide orientation for the juries. They advise jurists when asked. They write true bills to be signed by the foreman once the jury deliberates. Benjamin Franklin said, "Rebellion against tyrants is obedience to God." And William Penn said, "Men must be governed by God or they will be ruled by tyrants." It is up to we the people to prepare with a proper education to take back our unalienable right of consent once the swamp is drained. NLA will continue to facilitate an education and an advisory board to assist the committeemen and the administrators on the grassroots level. President JFK in 1963 said, "Today we need a nation of minutemen, citizens who are not only prepared to take up arms, but citizens who regard the preservation of freedom as a basic purpose of their duty, life, and who are willing to consciously work and sacrifice for that freedom. The greatest danger to American freedom is government that ignores the Constitution." Thomas Jefferson. The saving of America rests on our shoulders. If proactive, educated patriots are not there to redirect power back to the people once we turn the page in Washington and our state capitals, it will only be a matter of time until we be returned back to the mire. So join us to be part of that solution. Go to National Liberty Alliance and join the revolution to take back America. Take our free civics and constitutional course. A higher education is also available under the educational tabs. Attend our Monday night teleconferences. For details to join, click on a weekly call. If you cannot join us live, download the call later from the same page. Support our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Click the banner on our front page. Support National Liberty Alliance financially by giving $5 a month or more. Okay, that brings us pretty much to the end. And that was, I read that out of the book that I'm writing. And hopefully people are going to take the course. It's also in our course. So I guess, is Brent here? And before we move to Brent, I guess we need to take questions. If there are any questions that came in, Jan, or any announcement to be made? I don't see Brent here, though. Well, I hope I was still here all this time. Looks like I was.
Yes, you were.
Oh, okay. any questions, Jan, coming in?
Yeah, I'd like to reiterate.
Hold on a second. I only got one person in the queue, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, star six, and I think a one after this. Star six and one. Go ahead, Jan.
I would like to reiterate the announcements from last week. The first one is, they are all three, or about volunteers. First, we need about three people or four to sit on a committee to contact hosts to get John and Gerard out there and get us some publicity. First, we need to identify the hosts that would be likely candidates. Then we need to get contact information on them. Now, the second thing, second group of volunteers, and this is something anybody can do, get on the computer and do a little Google search. We need to compile a list of donors that in the past have given to liberty organizations. Now, that shouldn't take that much time, and we need their contact information as well. Now, if you'd like to volunteer for that, that's something you can spend an hour a week, an hour a month, just anything you'd be willing to give us. Just email me, Jan, at nationallibertyalliance.org to volunteer. Now, we also are requesting, and we are getting a list together, have a little luck on this one, to get people to mail out this latest mailing that John's working on. It could be 50 to 100 pages, I guess John said the last estimate was. We started out with 1,000 pages, which was huge. 50 to 100 pages is much, much better. I even have some people that have volunteered to sign up to do all five mailings that will probably be done per state of the major people, the governor and so on, and the federal district judge and so on in your area. I think I have 15 people now signed up to help print and distribute copies. So that leaves probably 85 more to go, somewhere in that order. And that's the only announcements I have. If there's no other announcements for anybody else, John, I have some questions.
Okay, let's go to questions. I'm not aware of any other announcements.
Okay. In the Pennsylvania Constitution, Article 1, Section 4, under religion, states, "No person who acknowledges the being of a God and a future state of rewards and punishment shall..." Da, 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 da. The question is, in a court of law, could you ask a judge or litigant if they acknowledge the being of a God and a future state of rewards and punishments?
Well, if you're in a court of law, you wouldn't have to ask because they have no power or authority inside of a court of law. And this is very important for people to understand, and I know it sounds very odd for a lot of us because we've grown to believe the lie instead of the truth. they have changed so much of who we are as a people. They have changed the way our system works, particularly our judicial system. We have two different jurisdictions. It's called, one is equity and one is law. And they have hidden the courts of law, which is courts of natural law. Court of law, or law itself, identifies with the true law, the nature's God's law. That's what law is. There is no other law other than that. Equity courts operate on statutes, codes, and regulations. Okay, and it's and they call that also law, but that's called what's called positive law, law created by men. And the purpose of that law is to run the nation, to operate the government. So that operates, and also certain things like commercial activities, making sure that it's regular throughout the states, not regulated throughout the states, but is regular, to open up the movement of any commercial activity as much as possible, but not restricting the flow thereof. Okay, so that's the two differences, though. We have to understand that. So when we go into a court of equity, we get a judge. He's a political individual. He's either voted in or appointed, and he gets to hear the case and make a decision. He is under oath to operate under American jurisprudence, and when he steps outside of that, which, of course, really is American jurisprudence really is a collection of a lot of the decisions of the United States Supreme Court, and they've come together over the years to bring, you know, the conclusions, proper conclusions, that judges must obey. In other words, a judge can't decide what he or she wants to do in a case. They don't get that option. They have to rule according to the law. And according to that law, as it is written, the Constitution is the beginning of that law. The legislative powers that we've given to the legislators expands that law into, in the federal level, 56 titles. Okay, half of the titles are pure administrative courts, and the other half of the titles are courts of law in the sense of positive law in courts of equity. Okay, where those courts can fine and they can incarcerate, but only when they operate under the criminal. Okay, when they're operating under the criminal court, okay, they must then bring in a jury. And it doesn't matter where that court is being held in any of the 94 federal districts. It doesn't matter. When a criminal court case comes up, people have the right of a trial by jury. Now, they can, of course, apply the titles, and the people should be directed to that fact, but they also should be directed to the fact that they have the power to nullify any of those regulations, codes, or whatever we call law as far as being statutes. Okay, so, but now, when the people are judged, we can be judged, we cannot be judged by a judge. How could the servant judge over the master? Just think about that. People go to courts all day long, and these political animals, they make all their decisions about our future and what is law and what is right and what is wrong and how we're going to be punished and so on and so forth. They do not have that authority. Only the people can judge the people. That's common law. This is what we have to drive back into our courtrooms. So therefore, there's no need for a judge to acknowledge anything or ask them to acknowledge anything. If a judge is ruling, he's in an equity court. And whatever's going on in that equity court, he must rule according to American jurisprudence. And if he doesn't, if he continues to violate that, he's violating his oath, because American jurisprudence brings them back under the rulership or the ruling of the Constitution. So that, you know, and again, the people should never be caught up into that unless, of course, you know, look, a court case, if you're, let's say, you know, I was a contractor, and if I had a case and I wanted to sue someone, or someone in any other business wanted to sue someone else, okay, you could take it into a court of law where a jury decides, Or you could take that into an equity court, meaning being that the agreement that you had rules the case. That would be a contract. But that would be true also in a court of law. That contract would still rule the case unless the jury felt that shouldn't have been, and maybe it was unjust or an unrighteous thing that's been held. I've seen contracts, for instance, in construction that are unlawful. They make, maybe someone writes a contract that's just overpowering to themselves and their own authority and their own ability to control everything so far against the other individual, and therefore it's null and void. It can't be held, and a jury can make any decision on that. But that gets back to that question, really. What was the question again? How was it framed, Jan, concerning a judge acknowledging God or something? You're muted if you're talking. Can you hear me? Did we
I
lose?
Can hear you much better than you can hear me.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, it says, in a court of law, could you ask a judge or litigant if they acknowledge the being of a God in a future state of rewards and punishments?
No, you can't ask them that question. You shouldn't have to answer that question because they have nothing. If you're in a court of law, there is no judge. If he is a judge, all judges are magistrate. He's acting only as a magistrate, which is the administrator of the court to exercise the will of the jury. That's all the administrator does. Makes notes and exercises the will of the jury. He exercises it also to the point of carrying it out in some fashion, maybe through the sheriff or some other, process. But he makes sure all of it, puts the seal on it, the signature, this is what the jury said, pop, that's it. That's as far as he goes or she goes. Now, of course, they keep the court case going and on point. But other than that, they get to decide nothing. There are no summary judgments. There is no decision by a judge in any way, shape, or power. Also, and this is extremely important, the grand jury or the trial jury is to look towards how to restore the injured party, not how to give a fine and money to the government or to throw someone in jail. That's not the point. The point is to restore the injured individual. That's the point, that's the focus, and that's the job of the jury. The jury gets to decide not only the facts, but if there is law to be applied, other than common law, natural law, if there's other law to be applied, like a statute of some type, because the person was operating under some authority and jurisdiction and controlled by those statutes, which are U.S. titles in the sense of federal government, then, of course, the jury will rule accordingly, exercising any what they believe is a righteous statute. And I will tell you that most of the statutes I've read, not that I've read a lot of them because they bore me to tears, but a lot of the statutes I've read are pretty good. I mean, I think the juries would agree with a lot of this stuff. From time to time, something else would come up. So, anyway, there's no need to have a judge acknowledge anything. Next question. Because there is no judge in the common law court. The only tribunal is the jury.
Okay. This next question says, my attorney, working on my defense against actions of the local building department in court, has admitted to finding numerous instances of the judges and their staff involved in illegal acts and improperly written summons, notices, and so forth, which he said should disqualify their case. It's against the law and so forth, but he refuses to take any legal action against them. He is just constantly defending me in an appearance after appearance. He says it's because they're all higher courts and authorities. They're all corrupt, and it would be a waste of time. So the question is there any legal obligation upon an attorney to pursue charges against a judge or court administrators if he or she finds they've committed illegal acts and violated court rules or court laws against the client he or she is representing?
Well, look, they have a duty to do certain things, and that is to correct problems, report abuse, report breaking of the law, And even go through the process of suing on behalf of an individual if hired to do so. The problem, of course, is that they're in an environment which is very difficult for them to do those things. Should they try to do those things, there's no doubt they themselves will, first of all, probably lose their license, their careers, their reputation, might even be put in jail. That's how dangerous things are in the courts. I've seen it myself on situations. Take the case of the Bundys out there in Oregon when they were in the courtroom and it was finalized and the people were to be set free and they seized control over them anyway to transport them, even though there was no summons at that point or anything, any kind of a warrant for them put forth into that state, the way I understand it, there was no acting warrant at the time. They nevertheless continued them incarceration and sent them to Nevada for another court case. Okay, and in that process of objecting, one of the lawyers which was objecting on their behalf, the marshals came and they tasered them, and him, the lawyer, and shut him up. Okay. And I presume, I wasn't there, so I don't know the actual details, but I presume that was under the influence of the judge. The judge certainly didn't do anything, and no other officer in the court did anything. And that's the kind of thing we're up against, and it's unfortunate. Now, only when we, the people, become the consenters of government and take control of judicial and the political process, this is extremely important. If we do not take control of the judicial process, we have nothing. We can never consent to government. That is the most important part of our liberties, is to take control of the judicial process, to make sure that the people not be abused in these courts. And also, of course, to take control of the political process so that these people can be trained on the committee man side of things, on the Constitution, be able to be good committee men, choose good statesmen, and only people who have taken courses in the Constitution and have an understanding of the Constitution. The Constitution is not moot. The Constitution is not difficult to understand at all. It is very simple. It's a matter of spending time thinking about it and reading through it very carefully, comparing it to other things maybe, but, you know, being very careful, you go through it. Anybody can understand it. There are a few places that might be a little difficult. Basically, if you get out a dictionary and take your time, you should figure it out, particularly and work with a Black's Law Dictionary or the Bouvier's Dictionary, which is available on our website, by the way. You can download that on that page when you come in under due process. But it's very difficult for these people to do anything, and that's why the people have to take this control in both political and judicial. And if we don't do it, then we deserve what we get. Woe is us. Next question. Any other questions?
Yes. Next one says, I need your help. I'm filling out the affidavit against a court which denied my rights under the Fifth and Seventh Amendments. After filling it out, it looks like I have to print it out and have it notarized. After that is done, am I expected to mail it directly to the NLA? If so, what address? I need the USCL.
Well, if they're talking about having us work with them by joining their cases, I presume that's what they're talking about. You have to direct all your questions to Jim. Jim will go through the process and everything that needs to be done. It's pretty simple, but people are getting confused on it, so people need to really pay attention to what they're being told and what the process is. We're not requiring at this point. Talk with Jim about that. You go to intake. Just send an email to intake@nationallibertyalliance.org, and that starts the communication between you and James for the process. Also, you can take care of your own business. We offer on the same page where you can, you know, download the necessary form. It's a very simple form, just basic information, the name of the court, the judge, and prosecutor or lawyers, and so on and so forth, addresses. So it's pretty simple to fill out that. piece of information. But at the same place, if you go down a little further, you can do all these things yourself if you've got the experience. But at the end of the day, if you don't get anywhere with whatever you're doing, we may be able to assist you and continue also to join your case in with ours also. So anyway, that question needs to go to, just got to make communications with Jim and he'll step you through the process. He may only give you a piece of information to do this first, then you come back, then he'll give you the next piece of information. We need to make sure everybody follows the instructions to the letter. Anybody who steps outside the instructions or steps in ahead of the thing will only, you know, make it longer for the case to get processed and into the queue, so to speak, of our case. It's not going, or filing of any papers. You know, we can file papers right away in most every case, and then the second part of that would be taking your case and joining it. But we will first try to get them to do the right thing by sending what's called an amicus curiae, which is a friend of the court, and in this case, the friend of the court is the grand jury, and trying to get the court to do the right thing. And if they refuse to do the right thing, then we bring it into adjoining our case. So, next question.
Okay, the next question is from Felicia. She says, where's the case that I filed? It can't seem to be found in Pacer, not even by the local sheriffs. It's been almost 4 years now and nothing, yet they've been given 30 days to respond. Why can't anyone find it? Is that a result of me being homeless during this time because it was never filed?
Well, probably the case is that they didn't file it. They've got it and threw it away, concealed it, or whatever they did with it. This is not uncommon. You know, that's why it is extremely important. Any papers you file, if you personally take it down, you want to get a stamped copy of the clerk, okay? The second thing is if you mail it in, then you make sure you do a return slip where the signature is on it, okay? Now you've got proof of that filing. And if it's not in the files, then you go after the clerk. And we would assist with that if you're filing the case.
Yeah. This is one that we filed for her.
We filed all the... Right. That doesn't mean that they took it and put it into the case. We'll have to go back and look and see what we did everything with a signature, so we do have anything when we were filing everything. We have certified each paper we filed. So we can pull that out and utilize it from our end, but we'd have to pick it up and join it to the case. We could do something... Maybe send an amicus curiae into that case inquiring about, or maybe send a paper to the clerk inquiring about why that case was not filed. It was filed into the court. It was received by the court. Here was proof of service. Where is it? Who took it out and why? And the clerk, hold the clerk responsible. You see, if a judge pulled it out, the clerk would know. If the clerk pulled it out because the judge told them to pull it out, the clerk would know. The clerk knows everything of what's going on, what happened to a paper, if it was filed or not. So courts are corrupt, and it's far more corrupt than most people realize. The people who are caught up in the system, they start to see the corruption, and they get very frustrated, and they're beat up pretty badly in these courts, severely and constantly. I have never seen a family court case, for instance, that went well. I haven't seen no tax cases that went well, no criminal cases that went. Everything is just pile it on the people and beat the hell out of them. That's my experience since I've been involved in this. And I started getting into the courts about 10 years ago. And since then, it's just unbelievable. So anybody that's just starting to fall into this, be worried, be careful. You're in the pit of hell. These people are evil. They don't care. And it's time to bring them and really start indicting these people. You know, and that's where we're heading for. That's where this next paper is coming from that we're going to be filing. So that's where that is. I see Felicia's in the Q&A. She's first.
Yes.
She can continue, but I don't want to discuss too much more than what I just said. Generally, that's it. We can look further into it by the papers and inquire why it hasn't been filed. So anybody who we filed papers for, and you should go down to the court and see, you know, pull the case, take a look at it. You can pull any case, take a look at the case, see all the papers that are filed. There is usually a list, okay? You can go to PACER and get it. Get that list, and if you see that the papers that we filed on your behalf did not get into the court, then you let us know. We will give the court the opportunity to correct their error and fix the problem. And fixing the problem means bringing back people back to their original state of being, you know, to restore them. So, and then, of course, pulling that case in as a joinder. What else?
That's the end of the question, John. That's all I have.
Okay. All right. No, and you've got the announcements pretty much done, I guess.
All right. Yep.
I don't see... Is Brent? I don't see him.
Don't see him, yeah.
Okay. All right, I guess we'll just go to an open forum. Anybody has a question or a comment, you can get into the queue, *6+1. We only got a few people in the queue, so *6+1. Felicia, you got the mic. Go right ahead, Felicia.
Hello. How are you gentlemen doing tonight?
Good, good. How you doing?
Awesome, awesome. I think you pretty much answered the question for me. I really need to see why that is because
yeah,
it's been a while.
If you pull the PACER or you go down to the court and you see that it's not there, you can inquire why it's not there, and you'll probably get a blank stare. But if you pull the PACER, then we can work off of that. Or you can go down to the court and then do an affidavit that you spoke with the clerk. They don't know anything. They just looked at me like a deer in the headlights or whatever. And papers are not there. And so some way we need some proof that it's not there that we can act upon that.
Well, I filed it with the local clerk. I guess I would have to call.
Did you do the filing?
Say again?
Didn't we do the filing for you?
Yes, you did. But I also gave it to the sheriff, and they told me they couldn't find it.
Yeah, well, remember, the sheriff doesn't have a clue. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I'm trying to think if I've met many sheriffs. Look, my sheriff's pretty good, and he's learning, but he's still not there. I haven't met really any. Only Sheriff Mack is the only one that really has taken a hardcore constitutional stand that I've seen and understands it pretty decently, and not completely, because even Sheriff Mack has some blank spots he doesn't understand. He doesn't understand the power of the people. You know, it's not the power of the sheriff, it's the power of the people, okay? And it is true that the sheriff is the last line of defense, okay? But the sheriff is nothing without the people. And the jury and the grand jury is the most powerful, powerful positions. And we, the people, get that opportunity to come and be...
Hello?
I don't hear you, John. I can hear Felicia, but I don't hear you, John.
Hey, Mr. Gans.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm okay, yourself?
Doing well.
Okay, you been okay?
I think I just got back in.
Okay,
so.
There you go.
Yeah,
me too. Last month, can you hear me now, by the way?
Right, you sound good.
It seems like the last month or so, I've been having so many problems trying to stay online on Monday nights, you know. I don't know what's going on, but I get these poor connections. I get disconnected on the platform that we come in on. Right now, it's trying to reconnect and still hasn't reconnected. So I can't even hit the next person. So if you want to hit that little flag next to the next person, if we're ready to move on.
Okay. No, I have two more questions.
Oh,
they're short.
Go ahead.
What do you think about DJ appointing Rick Scott to handle all the health care issues when he embezzled millions of dollars from the American people here in Florida? That's one question. And the second one I had to ask is, I heard you from the beginning. I was on the call since the beginning. When you read the preamble of the United States, I actually read it as you were speaking, and I learned that in the sixth grade. It's unfortunate that people don't teach kids that way today. So my question about that is, how does that apply, the Constitution of the United States, apply to the Moors?
How does it apply to who?
The Moors.
Moors? Spell it.
M-O-O-R-S.
What is that?
Moorish.
Can you define that? I'm not sure I understand what that is.
Okay, the Moors claim to be the original Americans.
Yeah, well, that's nonsense. Look, we the people, you could come from another nation, another country, whatever you want to call it, and become an American citizen by raising your hand and taking an oath to give allegiance to this country, and you're as much an American as anyone else. So forget about someone claiming to be the original, as if they have certain more authorities or something, I presume. I don't know. So I would totally ignore that. Look, if you're one of the people, and you know what? Look, you don't even have to be a citizen of the United States to get justice in our courts. If you're in this nation, in this country, and you are in one of our states and you're in a court, you have every bit of an unalienable right as any other human being has, because rights are unalienable. They're given by God, and God doesn't say, well, okay, I'm just giving it to Americans today and maybe some Canadians and maybe a few English over here, you know, Britons. No, that's not the way it is. No. Natural law is natural law, period, end of subject, nothing else to talk about. So as far as that is concerned, you know, everybody gets the equal treatment. Justice is what the key is. Natural law is all about justice. It's not about revenge. It's not about putting people in jail. It's not about doing any of these stupid things that they do. And you know what? Putting someone in solitary confinement is cruel and unusual punishment. I don't care that people have heard about it so often. They could think what they want. It's cruel and it's unusual and it's wrong. It's evil because it injures the individual being put there. They will have a scar for the rest of their life. The first part of that question, I don't have an experience of what's going on down here in Florida to make any comments on anything, but if an individual is breaking the law, they should be indicted and tried and dealt with. And again, you know, something obviously is going on. They're connected. Maybe they're a political figure or something. Maybe they're connected to political people, whatever the case may be. They're being protected. Big corporations are protected. So they're being protected by the powers that be, quote unquote, and you can't get to them and deal with them, these people, but get to the other side of justice, what we're trying to do, okay, and have the people take control and consent to our government, consent to our court, consent to our political process, consent to their doing right, their behavior. Or not. If they're in bad behavior, let's take them out of there. Let's recall them. Let's indict them. Let's do what we have to do. If Congress isn't going to do their job, then we'll do it for them. And we can do it in those two ways. If the person's a criminal, they need to be indicted, and they probably won't be indicted, it sounds like.
They made him governor.
Yeah, well, it sounds like he's not going to be indicted until the people get in control and someone comes and brings the case up to the grand jury and the grand jury brings an indictment down there. And we can't do anything on that level. You know, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, which is what we've put together to act together to deal with one thing, and that's subversion against the United States by enemies both foreign and domestic. And so that's our duty. We will remain in session until that is complete. Once that's complete, then the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury will dismantle itself. We'll always be on call if it's necessary, but we'll dismantle ourselves, and then juries will continue. And even while we're dismantling or finishing off whatever we're doing at some point in time, once the people are taking control, they will be pulling juries in their counties accordingly and dealing with the problems and the local problems and all the local crooks, the governors if they're crooks and people and legislators and judges and whatever it has to do, people of their counties need to be doing that by dealing with that from the standpoint of the jury. And the committee men have to stop stop allowing these criminals from becoming into power again. You know, and if they don't know the Constitution, they should not get the signatures of the committee men. The committee men should not be supporting them, going out getting signatures for them to get them onto the ballot. And so, okay. Look, this is all. You can blame. We can blame it on anyone we want to blame it. But I'll tell you what, the blame first goes to ourselves. This is our fault. We the people have been complacent. We the people have not, and especially now more than ever, the last 4 or 5 years particularly, we've been trying to drive home the responsibility of the people to take control of their government and teaching them how to do it. And some people are doing it. There's a lot of people listening in and not doing it. We got over 7,000 members, and we got a lot of people who are not doing it. You know, well, look at it. If we fail, it's because the people decided we're going to fail. Well, we're not going to do it. We're not going to have liberty. We're not going to have just courts. We're not going to have a just government. We're not going to have a president that does the right thing. You know, let's go back to Clinton and all those people and Bushes, and let's give power back to them, because that's what we're doing when we refuse to get up and take control. So this is the call out to everybody. People need to step up and do what has to be done. You know, stop being selfish and get up there and do it. Let's take some time out of your life. What is more important for you and your posterity, your children? What's more important than liberty?
Nothing.
Right. Nothing is it, save God himself, of course, but nothing else. You're right.
Well, I'm going to tell you, Mr. John, when I was in the police academy in the 90s, I was given a booklet. It's a little orange booklet about the Constitution. I think it's only like 25 pages, and I still have it. I can tell you now that a lot of stuff that you guys talk about is not in it. So
right.
With that being said,
these
officers really don't know the Constitution.
No, they don't want them to know, because how could they be code writers and code violators, you know, code officers? If they know the Constitution will tell them they can't be doing what they're doing. That's a problem for them. That's why they don't know the Constitution. I want to tell you something. I have tried to take courses on the Constitution a couple of times, some colleges, online colleges, bore me to tears, learn nothing. Just nothing but garbage, things about, not the Constitution, but maybe some stupidity about the Constitution. And so I'm not aware of anybody anywhere teaching anything right. You know, there was one guy, let me think of his name. He did run for president once. He didn't get a lot of votes or anything. I'm trying to think of his name. I took his course. Can't think of his name. But... And we have videos on him. Matter of fact, we got some constitutional videos on him that he does that's in our civics course. But in any event, they're all garbage. Anything in school, garbage, worthless. Look at...
Trust me, I know.
Something based education is really looking towards the end results. The education of our children has an end game to it. They want to create a certain type of a people, and that when we send our children to school, they are not taught how to think. They are taught what to think. And the end result is to be good little socialists. That's what our children are being taught. And I want to tell you...
No, not my grandkids, because my grandkids go to a Christian academy and they can recite the Bible.
Well, now you've taken control, okay? And I did too. We did homeschooling. We did some Christian school and we did homeschooling. So we took control too. But people who are not taking control, I'm warning you right now, your children are being grown up to be great little socialists, destructive to this nation. And I'm telling you, and people don't know it. Go get their books. You know, I know my nephew goes to school. He doesn't have any books. Who goes to school without books? They print off these pages, and you can go on the internet and print some of them off. But they print off these pages, and they get they can change the direction of a course in midstream. Okay, because there is no book, there is no way for a child to advance themselves beyond. I mean, you know, I wish I was more focused on education when I was younger. You know, my educational focus didn't happen until I became an adult, really. But, you know, when I was younger going to school, I really wasn't focused enough. But I wish I was more focused towards an education, because I did have textbooks. And I look back and I think to myself, boy, I could have sat down and read through those textbooks and be well prepared and getting advanced and just move forward, you know, skipping grades and everything, because anybody could do that if they put their mind to doing that. But if you don't have that opportunity to do that, you can't get there. And you don't know the end from the beginning. And either do the parents. Parents don't know the end from the beginning. They don't know what their children are being taught. And I'm going to tell you, I know people who have no clue what their children are being taught. And I know, because I've been in the schools during certain activities and seeing things going on that's appalling. And yet their parents don't know this. They're being taught to be really good socialists.
They're being taught to be stupid.
Yep, socialist. Well, you're still idiots.
Okay, I don't want to hold up too much time, but I'm going to say this, and, you know, I'm listening to the call. I don't believe in revenge, but I believe in karma. I think that what somebody puts out into the universe always come back to them. And what the banks have done to me, even the mortgage company said that it was false documents, that it wasn't legal. So what they've done to me and with my student loans, they have crippled me financially to the point where I can't even be more associated with this organization like I want to be. Because I remember when one guy, he was dealing with the Sandy Hook thing and was going to be down here in Florida, and I was going to show up to court and it was dismissed. You know, I really would love to be more accommodating to this infrastructure, but I can't because they have crippled me so much to the point where I can't even get online. I don't have gas. I sleep in my car. You understand?
I understand.
So after,
well, do the best
after all these years of me filing those papers and you guys filing for me, and it's like, it's like, what the hell? I mean, you know, and I understand everything that you guys are saying because, you know, I was in the police academy and I learned more about the Constitution with you guys than I learned when I was in the police force.
Right.
So
yeah, look at sheriffs don't even know the Constitution.
They're psychopaths,
Yeah, it's pretty pitiful when a sheriff doesn't know the Constitution. It's pretty pitiful when a sheriff has to go talk to a bar attorney. Those are the minions of the New World Order, and they are controlling everything. They control our sheriffs. They control our judicial process. They control our political process. They control every bureaucratic process in this country. The moment you go and face up to someone or some bureaucrat, next thing you know, you're met by security and lawyers. That is
well,
a
I've seen, the sheriff, the actual sheriff. I even went down there and tried to get an appointment with him. To talk with him, nobody ever called me back, but I seen him face to face, and I gave him a mouthful, and I said, you know, you threw me out of my house, and you didn't have jurisdiction. He's like, well, the court's appointed to me. I said, well, I hand-delivered it to you. I hand-delivered
right.
it, and I sent it, you know, to where you guys had to sign. He said it wasn't him, and he was so nervous. I made him so nervous, but I felt so good getting it off my chest, seeing him face to face. It's like what you did was wrong.
Well, look at let me just say one other thing. You know, we need to get to the other side of this thing, and the other side of this thing is the other side of a paper that we're getting ready to file. It still is not ready, and again, timing is everything, and we don't know when the best timing is, but we're moving to file it as soon as we can, and I believe when we're done and we're filing, it'll be the right time. I truly believe that. You know, we need to take care of our problems. We need to get educated. We can take control of the political process. We only need 5 people in every state. We really are pushing 4 or 5 people in every county. But even if we just get 5 people in every state,
I'll do it in this county.
Let's say 6 people in every state. If we can get 6 people in every state to take control of the political process of the state, you see, that's controlled by the elected committeemen. Okay? Now, we in New York, we had maybe, 150 elected committeemen maybe. And of those elected committeemen, we couldn't get empowered. Why? Because it was being controlled by unelected committeemen who were being ruled over by, you know, the powers that be, okay? They have total control over this thing. And so we went into the courts, and this is where we started from. We were going into the courts suing these people for power. And the courts didn't want to understand what we were talking about, didn't want to hear it. The whole thing was a sham, and the whole thing is a fix. But when we win this battle in the federal court, that's where we have to win it, in the federal court. And one federal court affects all 94 federal districts. That's it. And then the next thing we could do is drive it right down to the state, because it's a constitutional violation of the right of the people to consent to government and to have elected committee men representing the people of their election districts. And if that's not happening, you could take it right into federal court where we the people have the control, and we will focus down and empower those individuals that were elected. And once they take control of the state, because right now every state is controlled by about five or six individuals. It's the chairman of the state process. They call them state committeemen. And by the way, there is no such thing as a state committeeman. It doesn't exist. They do talk about them, but it doesn't really exist. They sit on a state level, you know, and we'll discuss those things when we get into the committeeman thing. I want to stick on really dealing with the judicial process, because that's where the real power is. Just like the Senate was the focus of Trump. Why? Because it controlled the judiciary. That's why. Okay. Yeah, it was a shame we lost the House and we get nothing done, you know, and he's finding ways to get around them. But we're controlling the judiciary. We're controlling making sure that we're going to get justice and make sure that the justice is applied. Okay, so with us, it's the same thing. Before we can take the political, we got to take care of the judicial. Well, I'm telling you, as soon as we get the judicial done, we want to take care of the political. But we're going to need a minimum of five, six people in every state that's going to take control of this thing. Because the elected committee men have one. Just think of this power. The elected committee men have the power and the authority to appoint every person throughout the state in every election district. The elected committeemen can go out and require an education of these people in order to train them and prepare them and show them how to become elected committeemen and become people with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy to take back the control to the people in their election district to really do their job, okay? This all can be training and built upon. But it first starts off with about a half a dozen people in every state. And we're focusing in on counties, though. We'd like to get four or five people in every county. But if we can't do that, at least if we can get six people in the state, because I'm telling you, I could tell you New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and all these New England states particularly, and some other states that I absolutely know there are no elected committeemen. But I will talk with them, and I will know a lot of people who will say that they believe that they're elected committeemen. And no matter what I try to show them, it's like talking to the, you know, I don't know, to the wall, because they just don't want to face up to it. But anyway, we're going to move on. If you want to get back in.
One more thing, and then I'm going to get off. You know, I have the original documents that were sent to me, and when they sold my house under some kind of agreement for a few years, I didn't even know the seal was on a document until the lady in the courthouse got a pencil and shaded it.
Did you know the seal was where? On your
I took the documents down to them. I didn't even know. And I put it, you know, with the documents that
you mean the documents you sent?
The documents that I was sent from the grand jury.
Right. So, yeah, we have sealed.
I took it down
They will put pencil mark on it so it shows up.
When they sold my house, I attached it to the deed, and I didn't even know it was there until that lady shaded it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, I never seen that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But anyway, I won't hold you up. You got a lot of callers.
Yeah, and we only got a few people in the queue. If you want to get back in, you get back in. Anybody else wants to get into the queue, star six? We only have a couple people there, so we'll move on to
thank
our next caller.
Thank you very much for your time.
All right. Thanks, Felicia. Okay. Our next caller is 248 number. We don't have a name. Maybe you give us your first name and your state. Area code 248.
My name is Don.
How you doing, Don?
Thank you. I'm sorry?
Don or Don?
Don. Don. D-O-N.
Okay, Don. Go ahead.
How are you, John?
Good. Thank you.
I have a question. My wife and I have a case in tax court, and I would like to participate and contribute to your effort associated with the grand jury. So I was wondering if I could possibly join that case.
Sure. Yeah. What is it, the IRS tax case?
Yes, it is. It's what happened is we had an NODs. What they did is they divided it into two dockets.
Okay.
And then we filed a petition, which I believe now I'm realizing was a mistake. And then we sent it to them. And recently we received pretrial orders for, I believe, November, sometime mid-November. And
all right, well, this is what, look at a
okay.
couple of things, so just for other people who are dealing with the IRS, never let an IRS paper come to you and go away, okay? You need mm-hmm. to answer every paper, and you got to be very careful in how you answer them. You got to read their papers very carefully. They're going to try to corral you into a situation. You got to be very careful with that. But, yeah, if you want to join the case, I don't want to get too much details into into the case itself, but just get a hold of Jim. You can get a hold of Jim at intake@nationallibertyalliance.org and
okay.
start communicating the necessary information, and we'll start working on it.
Can I use the intake form that you have associated specifically with tax court, or do you have a different type of form?
We have a form for, we ask questions. You have to come into our website, and you have to come under due process. If you click on due process, read that page very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody coming into this needs to read this page very, very carefully. And then at the bottom, you know, you click to enter, and you have to be an active member, a donating member of $5 a month or more. So it's very inexpensive. Pretty much anyone can afford that. The few people who can't afford that and wants to get in, get a hold of Jan. He'll get you access because we want everybody to have knowledge. But anyway, get in there, and on that page, on the top of that page, once you get into that next page, you know, you'll see a form to fill out and send it to intake, and Jim will start communicating with you.
Can I send that in PDF form?
We have it in PDF, and we have it in Word. No, as a matter of fact, we only have it in PDF, I think. I think Jim decided might be best just to leave it in PDF form. So that form is there in PDF form. You'd have to download it, fill it out, and then scan it back in and get it to Jim. I don't think we have the Word, but we may still have the Word up there. If we do, you can fill in the Word document and then just save it and send it over to Jim.
Okay. I've been in communication with Jim. I believe he's under the impression that you intend to deal with the tax court cases separately or at a later date?
Yeah, he might have. I haven't really got discussion on him with that, but I will... I know he tried to get me over the weekend, but I've been all over the place, everywhere but here. And but I will talk with Jim and talk with him about that. We'll take that on.
Yes, I would really appreciate it because I've been gleaning a lot of the information from your website, and I think I pretty much understand it. I mean, I think for me, common law is really. You know, instinctive.
Logic.
It's logic.
Yes, it is. It is. It's innate.
Pure logic. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's the difference between right and wrong. Everybody knows. Everybody knows right from wrong. Okay.
Yes.
A little child grows up, and to some degree, they know right from wrong with whatever they're dealing with. They know when they're in trouble. You get a 3-year-old or a 2-year-old, and they can go, "Ooh, I shouldn't have done that." Maybe they don't think too well on it, you know, however they think at that level, but the bottom line is they know they're in trouble when they're in trouble. At least they should. Yes. Maybe their parents aren't doing their job well enough then if they don't. Okay? You know?
Yes, absolutely.
But at some point, no right from wrong anyway. They call it the age of reason. I have no idea what that age would be. You know, maybe 8 or 9, they start to really kind of logically put things together. But adolescence is probably the key point when a child becomes totally responsible for what they're doing, in the sense that they're moving into learning to be an adult, adolescence, you know?
Yes, exactly. And that's when they start to, their feelings are stronger than usual.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose they're supposed to be more sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
To what is right and wrong,
right?
But what's intriguing is that it seems like that there's some kind of a gap or barrier to that in our present culture.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be able to transcend knowing or discerning.
Well, you know, we're a Christian nation, you know, and we're built upon the Bible. We're built upon Christianity. You know, the Bible itself, both Old Testament and New Testament combined. And anybody can deny that, but it doesn't change the fact of what and who we really are. And there is a huge difference, even though when most of the people in America are not really practicing Christians, most of the people in America don't know the Constitution and their founding fathers and history. They're very confused and taught a lot of lies and so on and so forth, generally speaking. But nevertheless, it is still built in our, you know, in our Americanism, in the fact that we're American, is that foundation that may not be spoken of, but we kind of know it's there, and because it's the way we act. Okay, we act as if we're free, and so on and so forth. And the same thing, we act with a Christian ideas, you know, a Christian morality, generally speaking, across across the populace. And so our thinking and what we would do as a people, okay, is quite different than a lot of other people. I mean, we looked at some people, what they do in other nations. It's just like, look what they did with, what was that guy's name? Not Saddam Hussein. Was it Saddam Hussein?
Yes.
Yeah, other one. Oh, goodness.
Khomeini?
Oh, no, there was a guy that they took out of power, and they did some horrific things to this guy. I can't think of this guy's name. But in any event, this is what the people did. It's so horrible. I can't picture Americans doing that. Not to say that we don't have groups of people that do things. You know, we have Nazi groups that are still in America.
Mm-hmm.
We have that one group recently that is pretty violent and active towards conservative individuals. I can't think of that name either. You know, so we do have these little groups, but generally, people in general, we have a higher sense of morals than most other nations do. And that's only because of two things. Number one, we're under the common law, and therefore the morality is expressed to some degree around us that we pick it up. And the second thing, of course, is because we are Americans with a constitution. We have a constitution that is founded on the Bible. So that combined makes us a different kind of a people, so to speak. But any people can be that if they get under these mindsets. But we should be more so. We need to get back to the basics. You know, we have to be a morally minded people. We have to understand our roots. We have to understand our Constitution, our founding documents, the common law, and acknowledge God as the king of the court. And
yes,
you can believe and think of God however you want. That's your business. But the bottom line is the creator of this universe is the king of our court. That's the court of justice. We're under his law. And he has given us and ordained us to have 12 individuals to judge us. We're judged by the people. Okay? That's the common law process.
Yes, absolutely. And we should be setting the highest standards and
okay.
leadership position for the rest of the world instead of doing the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they would respect us more. I think they feel that we're not doing that, then it gives them the right also to be decadent.
Well, you know, Trump is making a lot of changes in that area there. And once America gets back to its roots, even if they're not educated, but back to their roots in a mindset is a beginning, okay? And
yes.
you know, Americans, we're not interested in war. It's unfortunate that we have these people that have taken control of our country, and they're the ones interested in war. They're the ones that have kept us in a perpetual war. Trump's shutting it all down. You know, he's making everywhere. And he's trying to get a relationship with, you know, especially the countries that we would, could have a problem with, like China and Russia, okay? And even Korea could cause a lot of problems. And Iran and other places could cause problems. But, you know, he's just trying to get peace out there, and that's what he should be doing. And I think he's going to accomplish it before his 4 years are up, and he's going to take the next 4 years, and, you know, things are going to be very interesting. But, you know, the people, really, we need to get educated, because I'm telling you, if we don't take this country back by consent, okay, by consenting to everything they do, when they do something, we need to look at it and say, we consent or we do not consent. And we can do that to everything if we take control of the political and judicial process. It's very, very, very simple. It's a very, you know, ingenious plan on the way this whole thing works out. And then, you know, then we'll have just courts. If we have just courts, we will have a just nation. If we have a just nation, all of a sudden you're going to see justice flourish through the world, okay? Because other people will want to have what we have. Maybe in their own way, but they'll want to have what we have. After all, they do want to have a lot of things we have, but how much more a just system, a government under the control of the people, you know?
Yeah, that would be really, really special, and something to admire, and also be to exemplify for everybody else. I mean, I would imagine that they would like us to be in leadership position, and really show what that justice can be achieved, and successfully. But if they see us doing the opposite, they will lose respect for us, and then I think that it will give them the justification to also copy that, and they won't rise to the occasion. But I think it's the responsibility of the United States to demonstrate that, especially since we do have the circumstances of a constitution which clarifies it, like, you know, the Declaration of Independence. I can't think of any piece of work that I have ever been exposed to that is more revolving around the Bible than that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, so, yeah.
And,
the Declaration of Independence goes right to the core.
Yes, yes. And what's ironic about it is that it is questioned. And then, for me, I always associate it with God's ninth commandment, thou shalt not bear false witness. Mm-hmm. And I see that they're doing exactly that. On one hand, they're trying to present us as being a free, just nation. But on the other hand, they're doing the opposite. And they're using that as a cover-up. So we go to school, we learn about the Constitution, and we end up thinking, well, yeah, that's what we are supposed to be. And, I mean, for me, it's second nature. I identify with it without even having to read it or be aware of it. And, I mean, my family...
Well, I could tell you the children today are not... And I don't even think they bring up the word Constitution, to be honest with you. You know, I doubtful that they do.
Yeah, you're so right. Yes, they all of a sudden they become desensitized, and they're forgetting their roots.
Mm-hmm. Well, this all started many, many years ago. I know this started in the early 60s. I remember when they started moving God out of the public schools and the Ten Commandments, and they used to have religious instructions, you know, where kids could go to a certain class on certain days and have their religious instructions, and they even took that away from them. And I know for a while, because I was going to a Christian school and at the time, and I remember they were able to have early release on a certain day of the week to come over to our school to be able to have a court, you know, one 45-minute session of religious instructions. And whoever wanted to come over, of course, you know, you had Jews who were able to go to another place if they wanted to or whatever, and Christians here and whatever, if they wanted to. But even that stopped. That didn't last very long. I remember it just kind of just stopped. It just wasn't there anymore. But I remember when that transition was happening, and I was pretty young at the time. And that was the beginning of the destruction. And then Xmas came about instead of Christmas, and nobody could use it. Yeah. After a while, nobody would even say Merry Christmas. They leave Christ out of everything, you know?
Yes, very true. Yeah. I mean, that's why they talk about separation of church and state, but then they present the hypocrisy of teaching evolution,
right,
which is atheism, atheist religion.
First of all, there is no separation of church and state per se in our constitution, mm-hmm, or in our government. Of course, we don't want churches ruling in our state either, you know. But the key thing is we want godly men from wherever they come from.
Yeah.
A Jew or a Gentile, a Christian, it doesn't matter. As long as they're godly people, people that have morally minded, that's what we want. Morally minded, I guess, is the key. Godly minded also, of course. Because those people ruling over, you know, with the jurisdictions and the powers and the authorities that we, the people, gave them, will exercise it more properly. But we just have nothing but criminals up there, and not only in Washington, but on our own capitals. Anyway, we got to move to the next caller. We'd only have a couple of people. If you want to get back in, you can start.
I have just one last question. Our trial orders is for November. Is that problematic in terms of...
No, not at all.
Okay. So we can just proceed with the trying to join...
Yeah, as long as you have the information of the location of the court, the name of the court, and number, and that kind of stuff, we can do something.
They're located in, what happened is we...
Well, you don't have to get into that with me. Get into that with Jim.
Yeah. Oh. Yes, I will. I just wanted to say that they have a system where they establish, where you file a petition, they establish a location separate from Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if that would be an issue.
Yeah, I don't know how that works, but if you're going into a federal court, though, right? Tax court.
Yeah,
okay.
We have documents.
A tax court will have a number.
Oh, yeah,
it'll have a number. And it'll have an address and a name of the court. And that's the basic information we need. Your Jim will go through that with you.
Okay, very well.
Okay.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
All right, you're welcome. All right, by the way, we only got a few people in the queue. Anybody wants to get into the queue, *6? Yeah.
We got Brent online now if you want to go to Brent.
Okay, let's do that, and then we'll come back to the people in the queue because we only have a few people left in the queue. So, Brent, how you doing? Are you ready to go forward?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, let me introduce you. This is Brent Winters. He's the author of the book, The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic.
Thanks, John. As always, my comments are my own. Enjoy listening to the conversation, though. And because I'm driving, I'm able more to just, and it's easier to speak my mind instead of having to follow a format, which I enjoy doing very much, too. But you had raised a point that I wanted to unpack even more. And it's the idea of us being a Christian nation. And I like to try to find out for myself. I've always been interested in that subject as long as I've been able to think for myself a little bit. And I ask myself, what is the standard of measurement whereby we may decide we're a Christian nation? And I've come to the conclusion that it's something more that we catch, and that we catch the idea and we begin to see it as true, but there is no clear measuring standard. It's like trying to say, well, how do we know what books are in the Bible? Does somebody get to decide that? Well, the fact is nobody ever did decide it. There wasn't ever a church council that ever was held, that ever declared, contrary to what people say. It's just simply untrue. It never happened. It is that the books of the Bible, for instance, I'm trying to draw an analogy, are the books of the Bible because they have arisen in common usage since the first century, and it has become a consensus by osmosis almost. And it is a recognition we make. We recognize which books are parts of the Bible. There have been times in the history of the church where some prominent figures have said, no, I don't believe this one is. One well-known example is Martin Luther. He questioned the book of the last book of the Bible, Revelation, and the book of James. He later came around and said, yeah, James, I get it. I understand what that is. Book of Revelation he included in his translation, but he questioned it. Well, that's the way it is with this question, are we a Christian nation? And it's not something we can measure directly. We call the Bible the canon. That means measuring stick. It is the measuring stick. Well, if it's the measuring stick, by what do you measure the measuring stick? And the answer is nothing. You don't measure the measuring. There is no other writing, for instance, that casts light on the Bible in the sense that the Bible casts light on all other writings. Well, are we a Christian nation? Well, it has always been a consensus. I look at the military markers, the national graveyards, and they're covered with crosses. Now, the cross is not necessarily a Christian symbol. I don't think we find that clearly in the Bible. We see it throughout the history of the church as an accepted symbol. And because of that, we can say, though, that this is the accepted symbol for whatever reason. And it indicates Christianity. And across the board, Christianity has been accepted. Even back in the 60s and 70s, I don't know if they do now, but when men are sworn into military service, boys and men, they traditionally received a copy of the New Testament from the Gideons. That's always been true, and other religions haven't been afforded that prerogative, haven't taken that step. Maybe they do now. I'm just saying until very recently, that hasn't been true. How else can you explain the unprecedented wealth and prosperity that this nation has become an engine to produce, except there's something different about us? And if there's anything different about us that has been different in the past, it is that we have been decidedly Christian in our outlook, and other nations have recognized that. I've had people from places like New Zealand, for instance. Now, New Zealand was founded as a Christian country, but people from New Zealand, I'm talking about people that are Christian folk that have made their lives be professors in Bible schools, for instance, tell me that we as Americans do not understand how the rest of the world looks at us, including people in New Zealand. And as I said, it was founded as a Christian island. And people tell me from New Zealand that we're looked at as being excessively puritanical, even with what's going on today, compared to other nations in the world. We are puritanic still. And having been a few other places, not in every place, I've been to Europe and Southeast Asia, and I do see that there's a vast difference between us and them, even on the mainland in Europe. I've never been to Britain. But I do see there's a difference, and I see that we are more puritanical because of our roots, and our roots are very important. You can't take and transport who we are, transpose it onto another country. It's been tried. People said we're going to bring democracy to this country or that country. That's political promotion. It never happens. We're not going to bring democracy. Number one, to bring democracy would be to transport something to another country that would destroy them. We are not a democracy, although people say that. We're not even clearly a republic. We have a republican form of government, but we're a common law country. That's our government. And our common law, here's another indication, another badge of our Christianity. It's been recognized on all hands by those that have spent their life studying the matters. And I like to quote two men, both of them Supreme Court justices of the United States. The one man was on the first panel of the Supreme Court when our country started. His name was James Wilson. He said that our common law is of origin divine. he was an immigrant from Scotland, as were many people in the colonies at that time. But it is an origin divine. That means it's of God. Justice Joseph Story, I think, served longer on the Supreme Court than any other person, started when he was pretty young. He said that there never has been a time that Christianity did not lie at the foundation of our common law. And what distinguishes us from the rest of the world? Here's what it is. We are not result-oriented in our law. Our common law is a course of process. It is not a commanded result, a course of process. And this is what our common law brings to our understanding of what we call the Bible. There's no question that the Bible has had an overwhelming influence on who we are. And if you don't believe that, go read the book. You want to just get a feel for all the evidences of it. It's a big, thick book. The name of it is Of Law and Revolution. Of Law and Revolution by Harold Berryman, former professor at Harvard Law School and then professor at Emory down in Georgia. He got ran out of Harvard. He was too Christian for them. And he delved deeply into the difference between the law of the land, our common law, and the law of the city, and pointed out in the course of all of his research and study, and that book was the result of a lifetime of trying to ferret out the details of this grand principle of our Christian nation. He came to the conclusion that we have something very different here. It's even, as he quotes and other people have said, we are more English than the English in the sense that our common law is more pure here in America. In England, they don't even have jury trials. And no. I had my driver about hit something here. Well, I'm not driving anymore. We don't even have in England, they don't have jury trials in non-criminal cases. They quit that. They don't have the grand jury. Did away with that in 1935. We have those things. Of course, one of the reasons we have it, we have those common law features. Those are common law features only in common law country. Cross-examination, the right to remain silent, the responsibility to keep and bear arms, the right to a speedy and public trial, which means the trial has to be oral. That's a common law practice. Cross-examination only exists in common law countries. On and on and on we could go. Separation of powers, three branches of government, no consolidation of powers in the hands of a single will. Those are all common law realities, and those are what our Constitution preserves, and preserves in writing. The grand jury, the petit jury, the trial jury, only exist in common law countries. All other countries will say they have them as window dressing, but they really don't. That's all just a matter of form, and when it comes right down to it, they don't exist. As a matter of course of process, due process, what is due process? Without that, there is no common law, because our common law is due process. That's fundamentally what it is. It's not a commanded result. It's a way of going about business. It's a way of going about running our courts. It's a way of going about resolving disputes. And if we follow the process, we don't worry about the result. But the government hasn't commanded a result. It is commanded, our common law commands that we follow the process, let the chips fall where they may. Well, those are the things that I constantly turn over in my mind. My life is consumed with talking about such things. And I try to bear them over and say them over and over again and say them in different ways and see them applied in more ways that which I could shake a stick. That's why we're different. Is it Christian? Yes. Without Christianity, the common law would collapse. Our common law could not exist without Christianity. Why? Because Christianity not only does it provide the standard of due process, and that's the thing that's ignored in the Bible. The Bible is a book about process more than anything else. It's not do not covet, lie, steal, commit adultery, and murder. Those are the end results God commands, and God, the true lawgiver, has the right and the jurisdiction to command an end result. No one else does. It's up to us to observe the processes that he sets forth in his word and to make sure that they flesh out in ways that make them practical. That's our common law, to flesh out the processes that the Bible gives us first principles concerning, for example, at least two witnesses to establish every fact, no more than three witnesses. the Bible teaches. And the idea that capital punishment and execution for crime should never exist, should never happen without due process. We fall down there. Terrible. Terrible. People say, well, should we do what the Bible says and execute people for striking their parents or for kidnapping? And the answer is yes, if you follow due process. Due process is the thing that distinguishes us from the rest of the world. It's a Christian idea. It doesn't exist in a non-Christian world. It can't exist in a non-Christian world. It may hang on for a little while, but as Bagot said, the lawyer, the common lawyer, the barrister from England years ago, he said the whole world can see what right government is. John said a while ago, men can see right from wrong, and they can even try it, and they can even make it work for a while, but it won't last. Why? Because, says Bagot, he says, because without Christianity, the power that enables such things to happen will not persist. And that's the whole point of the coming of the Messiah. He is the only one that can enable and has enabled for his people those things to exist. And Christian folk have that responsibility to insist upon those kinds of things. Only Christian folk have the power that won't quit, even when they're not paid. The evil empire runs on money. They manufacture money. They pay people to do what they want. The Christian world just has truth, but it's much, much more powerful. And he gives a man or a woman a new heart, a new desire, and with that, he persists. He doesn't stop. Come hell or high water, come death, come jail, he keeps going. He keeps standing for the truth. And that's what has made us different, because those kind of folk here and there, throughout our country, spread all over, have persistently persisted. Well, John, I appreciate again the opportunity to say a few words, and back to you.
Okay, thank you, Brent. All right, before we move to the next caller, I just make a few points to build upon what Brent was talking about. And without Christianity, we could not have liberty. At least not the way we understand. We'd have liberty, whatever liberty government wants to give us, not our own liberty, which would be unalienable rights. We wouldn't have the Declaration of Independence. We would not have the Constitution, and with no rights, we wouldn't have a Bill of Rights. We wouldn't have had a Thomas Jefferson. We wouldn't have had a George Washington. We wouldn't have courts of law, period. These are all the things that make us and who we are. Even though we've lost a lot of these things, they're not totally gone yet. We still have the opportunity to, you know, bring them back, dust off the dust, so to speak, and bring them back. But it takes the people to step up to do this. If we're not willing to do it, who's going to do it? And you know, what about your children? What are we going to leave our children? This is what should make people make that decision to go forward, to take that step. Starts with getting an education. You know, and we offer that education right here at National Liberty Alliance, and I don't know anyone anywhere that offers an education anything like what we have, nothing. And you know, a true consent of government abilities. And everybody should be taking the opportunity of that, even though you don't may not even know how you're going to get involved or if you're going to get involved, but the knowledge of these things in order to make us, you know, really great again. The knowledge of these things in order to defend yourself in a court of law should you find yourself being there, whether you bring someone else there or you're brought there by someone else. You know, these are the things, you know, we need to in order to control our destiny and teach our children and to make sure we answer the call when we're called to the juries, whether it be a grand jury or a trial jury, to sit on that. We shouldn't look to escape those things. We should look forward to be involved in those things. Well, we have to revamp this whole system. A lot of things need to be changed, and we'll discuss a lot of those things as we go forward with things. But a lot of things need to be revamped. You take the jurists themselves. You know, they're paid very little money to go, and they have to leave their jobs and so on and so forth. Especially grand jurists. You know. There should be a limited amount of time people acting as a grand jurist, and anybody in the trial jury, usually I think a lot of them are probably quick, but there are some trials that go on quite some time. And people should be compensated. take some of the money away from these lawyers. Get rid of all these bar attorneys controlling our courts of law, and we'll have plenty of money to deal with then, wouldn't we, to be able to give to the people that are coming in as jurists so that they can continue to buy their bread and butter and milk and so on that's necessary to keep their families going and pay the rent and so on and so forth. But again, you know, I've seen some of these grand juries in motion 6, 8, 10 months. What's that all about? That's insane. That's total insanity. Again, different areas would be different on how long a jury would sit. You know, some counties would be very slow, so maybe they'd sit for a full month, and maybe they'd only serve 5 days. I don't know. I don't know how the process goes, you know, how busy things are, especially in the slower counties, with less population. Of course, counties down in New York City or other cities, you know, that's a whole different story. There's a lot more activity going on. And maybe a grand jury, there should be lots of grand juries being called into session, maybe one every week or something. Just keep rotating them, dealing with certain things and then moving to another grand jury to deal with other things and so on. And this will get more people involvement too. But people have to respond when they're called. You can't make a person sit on a jury if they're called. You know, you can't make a law requiring anyone to come to be a jurist. But we should be training, first of all, training ourselves and getting into our schools to train our children on the way that they should walk. And God has promised us if we train our children on how they should walk when they get older, they will not depart from that. You know, it's all about building good habits and building into our children the appreciation of the fact that they're born in a blessed land, and they need to return, you know, to that, being thankful by giving some of their time by responding to becoming a jurist. Everybody should be a committee man at least once in their lifetime. A very exciting job, by the way. Even though you're not paid for that one, it's very exciting. I doubt you'd do 40 hours in a year. I mean, it's usually evenings and stuff. And your big activity is mostly really when election time comes. You get the opportunity to quiz these people who are running for office within your election districts, anybody who affects your election district, whether it be, you know, a Senate or an assemblyman or a congressman, whatever, whether it be federal or state, if they affect your, whatever it is that affects your election district, you get to decide. Even the governor, you know, and the president to some degree, you know, you get to decide. Who's going to run and fill these positions. Of course, it gets a lot more complex when it deals with someone like President of the United States because it deals with all the states. But and the president isn't elected by popular vote anyway, and that's part of the balance of power. That's a necessity to be the way it is the compromise. And if you go back into history, you get to discover that compromise that our founding fathers made, you know. So our president is not elected by a popular vote, but elected by the states. And the compromise was let the people in the state make the vote to get the necessary numbers in order to elect the president. But, we wouldn't have any of these things if we didn't have Christianity. Anyway, let's move on to our next person. We'll go to Barbara.
Hi. Thank you, John. I have two questions. And
someone can.
Can you hear me? Hello. Okay. Should I do star 6 again? Hello.
I can hear you.
Okay. Barbara. Okay. Okay, Barbara, I can see you now.
Okay, great. Okay, so two questions. The first one was, I'm doing the government by consent course online, and I'm trying to train myself for the common law jury administrator position. How do I let you know that, is there a form to fill out to say that I'd actually,
If you go into your what would you call it? Let me take a look here. You go up and you click on My Account, okay? Okay. And when you go into my account, you should see inside there all the information to discover whether you checked the box when you went to take the course. Okay?
Oh,
and if you,
okay.
You should be able to see in there that you've checked the box in there for an administrator, and that would put you automatically into a onto a page, and
okay.
that page would tell us your name. It would give us the state and the county that you live in. And by the way, you don't have to work in the county that you live in. You can, doesn't matter where you work, it's a job, okay? So you don't have to work in your own county. You can work
okay.
in the county if that's more convenient to you. Sometimes it is, you know?
Okay, so, okay, sure.
But, and if not, if you didn't check it, let's see, there should be in here a place to be able to do it. You're good.
I have a contact information page and it asked me for my name and county, but I guess that I don't know that that's really it. That doesn't seem to be it.
No, but what it does tell you, though, like if you go when you go to take the course,
uh-huh.
it should ask you whether you want to be a committeeman. I mean, an administrator or not. Jan, do you remember how that works? Or do you know if there's a place they can go if they didn't check it on the courses where they can go flip a switch or something in their account?
I thought they could go back to their account and check the box.
You can do it in there? I'm looking at it here. I don't see a place to do that.
Okay, there was one other place. I think it's where you signed up as a grand jury administrator. There was a box you could click and unclick.
Where should I go to check to see? You know, it was in February. I don't think I did do that. Can I check it somehow?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. If you go to grand jury, then come down to become a grand jury administrator.
Okay.
Okay, it says to become a grand jury administrator, if you're not one already, click here, and that'll take you to a place where you can click the box. To remove yourself from becoming a grand jury administrator, if you are one already, click here. So on that page, highlight grand jury, come down to become a grand jury administrator, and on the bottom you'll see that. Now, and that automatically sets you up in a county that you live in, or unless you want to put another county in its place, I think you have the ability to do that, but you don't have to work in that county. Bear in mind, there are four positions in every county, and if six people sign up, it doesn't matter who signed up first. It matters who finished the course first, who is more finished to the course than the others, because obviously they have more energy and desire to be, get the knowledge than other people. So that's how we're going to choose the positions if it's overloaded, you know, in a county. But bear in mind, if you got six people in a county that want to become an administrator and four positions are filled, maybe the county next door here or there, you can go there and fill those positions there. So, but we are going to be looking at people who are advanced in the course. And once we get going, it's going to be up to the four individuals in each county to police themselves to make sure that all the administrators take the proper courses and do the right thing. I mean, you know, we're not going to do that from a national level, but we do expect and we will be teaching people to do these things because it's the right thing to do. We don't want people who have no knowledge and understanding of what they need to do. And we have to have people who understand the Constitution, basically speaking. I mean, none of us have to be perfect. We can correct each other as time goes on. But we want people who have a proper education and understand how the court system works. Maybe only one person may have the ability to write the papers, and we'll teach people how to write certain papers as far as the will of a grand jury is concerned, which is really simple. We don't have to be fancy about it. But we can try to create a little bit of a form, but people could do what they want. The point is to get the will of the grand jury down on a paper. That's the key. And unadulterated, okay? We want to make sure that administrators don't insert their own thoughts and ideas into the decision of a grand jury. We have to be very careful of that because that would be fraud. That would be a crime. That would be wrong. The grand jury their decision has to be as pure as possible. And even after we write it, we should give it back to the grand jury to review it to make sure we didn't mistake and misunderstand their desire and their thinking, okay? So, but all that we work out as the people. You know, this is what the people's work is.
In terms of counties, anything in my, nearby area is fine with me. Do I need to select a county or?
No, you probably already chose a county when you joined, and it's probably the county you live in, so that's the one you'll fall into. But again, remember, when the time comes, if you wanted to fill a county next door, you could do that instead of the county you're in, you know?
Okay.
I mean, some people could be in an area where their court is all the way on the other side of the county, and they may be close to a border or a bridge where they go into the other county, and right there is another county that the court is closer to them, and they'd rather work there, you know? So, again, you're not governed to work in the county you live in. Committeeman is a different thing. You have to be a resident of the town that you become a committeeman in. That is very, very important. You don't have to necessarily live in the election district that you're running for committeeman as, but you have to live within the town, though. Although they've worked things out where that is expanded and it's incorrect. You represent the town you live in. So, but anyway, that's a difference. We'll deal with a lot more information on committeeman later on. First, let's take control of the courts so that we can take control of our courts. Period, and get justice back again.
Right. In the beginning, you were reading something that said we're training people now to be jury administrators.
Right.
By that you mean providing the courses.
The courses, people going through those courses, coming to the Monday night meetings, asking questions, even in those areas. Of course, tonight we focused in, and I read a part of the book I'm writing, which talks about what exactly it is that National Liberty Alliance is doing. You know what our real plan is. Okay, and that's what we talked about tonight. And, people should be asking questions about that, too, maybe. We always try to pick up a subject every week so that we can get people more and more, prepared, not only for themselves, but especially the people that do want to be administrators. And the more involved you are and the more you listen and participate in our conversations and so on and so forth, the more educated you will become and the more knowledgeable you become, more aware of the subject matter and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We have really, for those interested, we have a fantastic Bible study available up on online also. If you come up to National Liberty Alliance, one of the best in my opinion. This Bible study that I put up there, the person who did it is my lifelong teacher. He's been someone that I've listened to. He died a few years back, but he was in the 90s, so he lived a good long life. But this individual was, in my opinion, one of the most blessed teachers that I've ever met, and I know a lot of Bible teachers. And I became a Bible teacher myself. I taught the Bible for many years. But this guy was just up there. And what he did a lot of studies. But the study I have up there is what's called Harmony of the Gospels. He takes the book of Mark, and he reads it point by point. And every verse, he takes that verse, and he compares it to Scripture, to the whole Bible. You'll find yourself being all over the Bible, looking to make sure to an understanding of that verse. He looks at the spiritual side of things, of course, the moral side, the historical side, and all those things. So it's really, really a powerful study. Anybody interested? Harmony of the Gospel. You find it under Reality Check. Go to Reality Check. Highlight that. Come down. You'll see Harmony of the Gospel. Under Reality Check, there's a lot of great stuff there. Really, really good stuff. You know, there's a thing in there on the brain. I think it's six parts. It's fascinating the way the brain works. You know, and. And that's something that, when you start to get involved in that six-part study or documentary or whatever it's called, I guess it would be a study, a documentary. But you know, really amazing how the brain really works. You never would have think, you never would have thought that it works the way it does. Spontaneous order, another one. Real space time. We have, I think, the space time. I forget how many parts that is. That is really fascinating. You know, that's why I just named it Reality Check: Christianity in America, Today's Issues, Health Issues. You know, we have live natural heating, healing forums. I don't know. We still have that going on, Jan? Do we have anyone teaching the healing forums these days? Jan? You have to unmute yourself.
No, we don't right now, John.
Okay, so anybody that wants to teach on that area, if you have some knowledge of natural healing, natural healings, different things, you know, we can set something up. We do have something, you know, where people come together in a forum. But if you go to health issues, if you look on health issues, there's cures out there for just about every illness you can think of, all the diseases and stuff. It's just unbelievable. There are lots of cures. Cancer is curable. Diabetes is curable. All these different diseases that are out there can be cured. Okay, but you know, that's the thing that is destroyed in our nation here. So,
can I ask one more quick question? In the course of on this history chapter, you talk about the freedom formula for freedom. So I looked it up online and I just saw this.
Say this again.
Formula for freedom. You have this phrase,
okay.
Formula for freedom. So
okay.
I looked it up online and I saw this article about federalism by Rob Bishop, the senator, going back to 2010, and he describes how when our government was set up, that, you know, this big fight between the anti-federalists and the federalists, and part of them just wanted to have the Articles of Confederation. Then finally they agree on this two-part system that he calls federalism, which he says is part confederation and part unitary, and unitary is what Great Britain has always had, what England has always had, where it's, everything is focused in Parliament. There's no, you know, vertical balance of power between states and the nation unit. It's all in Parliament, so it's unitary, but we have the vertical with the states, and then we have the national, and there's supposed to be this tension between them, although now the states have become a lot weaker. So he says that it was a new invention at the beginning of our, you know, at the birth of our nation, federalism. And I don't see that much.
Well, I don't
was
know. It new? Look, I think the guy, there's some truth to what you're saying, but I think the guy's confused, in my opinion. Look, there is a great book out there. It's called The Making of America. You want to really understand and know how America came to be and who brought together the freedom formula, which was Jefferson. Now, Jefferson, of course, didn't create it himself. He searched out history to discover the freedom formula that he put together. And that's the structure that we have. Well, the freedom formula basically is the structure of our government and of course, being under law and not, in other words, we are a republic, so we're governed by law, but we are a very unique republic. Our law is written by the people and of course, under the influence of God. And so it's really under natural law. And
okay.
You know, so Jefferson really kind of put together the freedom formula. I don't know that there was much of a debate or an argument concerning that. He kind of put it together. Now, the debates that took place, the difference between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists is really one simple thing. The Federalists were for a bigger, more powerful federal government, whereas the Anti-Federalist was for a smaller federal government, less control.
Mm-hmm.
And compromise came, and it's a beautiful compromise, really. You know, Jefferson and many others, because Jefferson was behind a big, big part of the of being behind the Anti-Federalists. But, you know, the big, big thing, you know, what they wrote was good, but there were a lot of flaws found in there, in the sense, not flaws in writing, but just not enough protection, okay? And that's where the Bill of Rights comes in. And I don't know, possibly, I'm not sure on this, but possibly Article 1, Section 9, okay, might have been something really pressed upon by anti-federalist more than federalist. I perceive that that's true, but I don't know for a fact. But I do know, because, you know, that's where they have habeas corpus and the right of habeas corpus and a lot of other restrictions in Article 1, Section 9. Okay. And you should read that. It's a very simple section to read, and you'll see what I'm talking about. And, of course, the Bill of Rights. And now the Bill of Rights is very unique because all law, even the Constitution itself, is read in light of the Bill of Rights. Anything that you can take out of that, if it injures any of our unalienable rights, it's null and void, you see. And that's what makes it unique. And that was the big debate and argument. There are some people who think that there is what's called 1787, I think it's called, Constitution. I think that's when it was much brought about to being done. And then they say, well, there was another one in 89. They switched us on it. They have no clue what they're talking about. And I made challenges on people that were supposed to be experts in these areas to show me these two differences. And they could not find two differences in two different constitutions. Never was. The difference between the 1787 Constitution and the one that they finalized in 1789 was the agreement to add a Bill of Rights in, I think it was 1791, I think, is when the Bill of Rights became effective. But there was an agreement to that. And you can read about that, as a matter of fact, in the preamble of the amendments to the Constitution. It says this: the conventions of a number of the states having at the time of their adopting the Constitution expressed a desire, in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the grounds of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution. And then that, and then they became resolved by the Senate and the House and so on and so forth. So they agreed upon these, the general idea of the 10 amendments. And I think there was actually 12. And we did end up, with, I think, with all of them anyway, just that some of them were combined. Okay, so like two became one. But generally speaking, what they originally brought up did come to be. And I have a feeling, and I don't have absolute knowledge in this, maybe Brent does because he did a lot of research in this kind of thing, in the common law particularly, and I'm sure his history is from listening, I know he's got good understanding and of history, knowledge of history. But if you look into Section 9, Article 1, I have a feeling some of these things were added in and agreed upon, which was some of these restrictive things. Like, for instance, in Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2, it says the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended. And then number 3, the bill of attainder or ex profacto law shall be passed. Number 4, no captation or other or the direct taxes shall be laid. Number 5, no tax on duty shall be laid or articles export from any state, you know, and no title of nobility. No money shall be drawn from the treasury in consequences and appropriations made by law. You know, these things here, I think might have been added and forced upon the anti-federalist. You see, what the anti-federalist was doing, I'll put it in Jefferson's words, to use the Constitution to chain down these people, chain them down, chain the people in government down with the chains of the Constitution. That was the idea.
The greatest laws are the ones that tell the government to keep their hands off the people.
To be left alone.
Yes. I mean, having an Article 1 and telling the legislature, you can make laws on this, you can make laws on that. That's okay. That's good. It's necessary. But the really important thing is to tell the government when and how it must leave the people alone.
If we didn't give them the authority or the power, the jurisdictions to write these things, then they can't write them. That's why all code violations, these local code violations. Look, you get a town. A town comes up, it grows, and it, you know, and they start to want to make more money. And because I'll tell you what, a lot of this money goes into pockets, and a lot of it goes through retirement funds into their pockets, really. But I'm sure there are other fugazi things that go on. But you get a town, and they discover that they can make a lot of money. They can get themselves a really big cash machine if they go and set up a court and a police department. And that's why you have all these police departments, which aren't necessary at all. They're all unlawful. They're unconstitutional. They have no jurisdiction over you at all. That's why I tell people, challenge jurisdiction and get out of there. And there is a process of doing that. And you got to push it. If you don't move your case, they'll move it for you. They'll move it into you being convicted. That's what they'll do.
Yeah.
And take control. If you allow them to decide whether they have jurisdiction, well, they already believe they got jurisdiction, so they're going to decide they got jurisdiction. Well, they're already biased. That's my position. You're already biased, Judge. Besides that, if I read the paper and challenge jurisdiction, and you decide, you read the paper and you slap your hand and say, hey, I got jurisdiction, well, you just proved your bias because you didn't listen to the other side. And you don't have, if you're a judge, you don't get to judge out of your own mind. You have to listen to both parties and make a decision on the conversation and the argument taking place. How do you come outside of that, Judge? You know, this is an EC Supreme Court, has no power, no authority to fine or incarcerate. How can you do that? It's purely administrative court. I'm here only because I decided to be here. And if I decide not to be here, well, the problem is they'll come out and arrest you, so you got to be careful. But, you know, you got to move that case to the next court. You got to move it into a court of record. You got to open a court of record, move it into a court of record, and push it up the rails, so to speak, to get out of that court. But anyway, they make money on this. It's all about money. And then the state got into it. Well, let's get the state police out there. Let's create the state police. Now you got the state police. Okay, they're out there giving tickets on the highway and everything. Yeah, that's hurt in the towns, but they're getting their piece of pie, and any ticket that the state police bring in, a piece of pie is going to the state. It's all a money machine, nothing but a big cash box, a cash register.
Right.
And then the only police officer we need is the sheriff. And if we need more sheriffs, if we need more deputies, then let's take the money we would have given over to these police and give them more deputies. Let them take over the state police barracks in a particular counties if they need so, which they shouldn't because they already got a central location. It's the sheriff's department, usually next to the correctional facility, you know, the county jail. And they can, you know, get enough, deputies to take care of things. There should be no – this ticket process is a big problem.
There's no basis for having just the police department as long as you can have a sheriff, you're saying?
There's no need for anything but a sheriff. That's all we need.
Okay.
We need a sheriff and his deputies. If we need more of them, let's put more of them on the road. But we don't need people going out giving people code violations.
No.
You know, it's all unconstitutional. I don't agree with it. Then I don't have to go. The only law I got to obey is God's law. That's what common law tells us. And the United States Supreme Court has ruled this many, many times over. Okay, that the that we only have to ultimately obey the law of God. They don't put it that way, but the natural law ultimately.
Okay.
We're not obligated to obey statutes. That's for government officials, elected individuals, appointed individuals, bureaucrats that are just hired. That's what the titles, that's what the U.S. titles are for. And also on state level, they have, regulations and codes and statutes that govern, the government activities on the state level and the county level and the town level and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doesn't control us. Anyway.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let me move on because it's getting late. Thanks, Barbara.
Thank you.
Okay, next caller we've got is someone from 321 area code. Give us your first name and your state. Area code 321. Area code 321, 505 phone number. First name.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay, sorry about that. But earplugs, I thought I had a speaker built in, but didn't.
Well,
name
hello, John, first of all. Eric is my name.
Okay, Eric.
Thank you very much for all you do, and thank you for tonight's lengthy conversation. I'll look forward to the posting on your page. My simple question is, what's your book status? Have you written a book before, and what's involved with this one?
No, this is the first book I've ever written, and I've got most of it written. I'm just sewing it together now and going through reviewing it and double-checking and so on and so forth. And my book is also connected to the course. I finished my study on the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights. I'm working on the amendments, and I'm also working on the Constitution itself. And a lot of that is already done, but I'm still working through all that. And as soon as I get that section done, that'll be posted up to the next chapter on the course. There's only a couple of people, I believe, that have made it that far, but most people haven't made it that far, so they don't know that part of this is not done yet. Then after that, the rest should run. I should be able to post everything up pretty quickly. I'm anticipating, but it's an anticipation, and I really don't know. I'm anticipating having the book ready by the fall, before the fall, hopefully. So sometime this year, of course. And
identify three locations you might be able to leverage book sales and connection. Are you familiar with Hillsdale College?
No, I'm not.
You may want to look that one up. I forget the president, but he's very active. Hillsdale, Hillsdale College. And they focus on giving a Christian and constitutional education. I think they have two locations. One's in the Midwest somewhere, and the other one's in Maryland.
Uh-huh. Well, I think I might have a publisher interested in my book, and hopefully they are. I think they're going to be. I've written shorter books, and they were kind of interested in some of them. But, you know, when they really got into it, it was very powerful, and even though I have all my sources there, I always write with sources. I've learned that a while back.
They wouldn't be a publisher, but there may be an opportunity. They have internet time and courses that they push out, and often they're done by specific speakers who are not necessarily part of the college itself. I mean, the college itself is a classroom-based kind of college, but they do a lot of reach out and have special speakers. So once the book's published, a great way to kind of get additional advertising. So that's one of the three. The second one is something called Truth and Liberty Coalition, and they're part of a bigger, larger church group. That's the AWMI.net. That's the overall arching entity, Truth.
AWMI?
AWMI, correct.
Dot net. At okay,
Andrew,
got it.
Andrew Walmack Ministries Institute. I may be wrong on the word institute, but maybe incorporated. Well, it's not incorporated per se. Anyway, dot net. It's very large. It's out in Colorado somewhere on a very large campus, et cetera. And they do mostly Christian training. David Parton, you familiar with Wall Builders?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, David Barton's part of their organization.
Oh, yeah, Jefferson. I know him. We've got a lot of his video up on our website, so he's
okay.
Excellent.
He's interactive. He teaches out there. They've got a lot of very world-class, renowned teachers. So Truth and Learning Coalition, and I think, let me see, I'll peek at the website here, had that up here. I think it is just that spelled out, truthandliberty.net. You'll find it if you go through the other website as well, the AWMI. This is a subset of that, truthandliberty.net. They do a live presentation every Monday, a little bit earlier. It's 8 o'clock on the Central Time, and it's 6 o'clock, I guess, Central Time. I catch it at 8 o'clock here. Anyway, the excellent speaker, E.W. Jackson, was there tonight, but there's always a different speaker again, another opportunity once you have your book written to kind of talk about it, show some credentials, and get your name out there for you, you and your organization a bit further. I just did that with E.W. Jackson, and he has a group called STAND. I forget what it, exactly it stands for, but it's standing for Trump and the Christian biblical constitution as well. And lastly, but not least, PragerU. PragerU, are you familiar with their videos? It's all video.
No. What is it? Prager what?
PragerU, PragerU, short for university, but it's all, I don't know that he has a real school or classroom, but that's the internet source that you would find. And they will take, if you, they have, they're kind of a keep it simple, stupid approach. They have about less than 5 minute videos that tell a very good story. You'll see tons of samples on that website once you get there and take a peek. And you could tighten down a clear net with graphics, et cetera. They have, I don't know if they
is
have
that the one at truthandliberty.net?
Nope, this is, I've given you a third one here, but not this one. This PragerU is a separate thing. That's the third one. So
yeah,
Hillsdale,
can you tell it?
Yeah, PragerU, then separate freestanding is just U as short for university.
.com?
You know, I'm not sure. Put it in the search piece and it'll
try
find it.
Okay.
You did try it and it didn't work just now?
Oh, no. I'll try all three, you know, netcom and org, and we'll find it.
Okay.
Well, one of the things...
John, it's on YouTube.
I'm sorry? Go ahead, Terry. Did you say something?
It's on YouTube. PragerU is on YouTube.
All right, we'll definitely take a look at it.
Well, he has his own website.
I want to move quickly with you, Rick, because we've got only a couple of minutes, and I'd like to get at least one more caller in here. But one of the things I'm thinking of, well, I'm confident I'm going to do it, Lord willing. Once I get the book done and get it published, I'm going to then take that book and turn it into a textbook for school on the grammar level. You know, I believe our children don't need any more than 8 years of school. We've got we make our children go to school for 12 years, and I think the whole plan really is they want to catch them while they're in adolescence, and that's the most important part for these people who have taken control of our children, to get them in adolescence. But they have to train them with the building blocks first, and get them as adolescents so they can train them to be good socialists, because that's what we've turned into. And if we gave children a real, true classical education, teaching them how to think and not what to think, but how to think, and let them decide what they want to think about, and give them the morals with it, give them all the tools they need, and they'll be far more advanced than any high school and maybe even a lot of college level people as far as being educated on a first 8th grade level. And that was an 8th grade level. But the point that I'd like to do, let me just hold on. The thing that I'd like to do is get a good textbook in there to teach our children, you know, the law and the court system and the difference between law and equity. They need to understand these things. Every American needs to understand these basics. This is not difficult stuff. It's not stuff that's going to bore you to tears. You know, you want to be bored to tears, go pull up one of the titles and start studying that. And let me tell you, you'll be pulling your hair out. Get into USC Title 26 and you'll really pull your hair out. You'll be pulling your toenails out, your fingernails out, anything, then read that stuff. I mean, it's just so horrific and boring and terrible.
And if you know David Barton, you know what that fight's been like.
Yep, he's interesting.
So there's a lot going on, and I'm actually going to try to turn the gears and go outside the schools. I'm going to try to take schools back into the churches, because since the churches have had a lot of relief under Trump, see if they can't start to open up schools. And charter schools generally have funding that will go along with it outside of the school. It's complicated, but I won't go into it. But right now, charter schools, and if it can do a charter school with online school, you can get the online portion covered under the charter portion and expand that right out into homeschooling or designated spots for online schooling to occur as well.
Look at the amount of money they pay for children to go to these public schools per child is unbelievable. Far more than anyone would pay the, for
and
the children.
And they're paying it into the overhead, as you already know.
Huh?
I said they're paying it into the overhead, as you already like we know. And not just that
they
don't go right down to the teacher.
They got what's called outcome-based education, okay? And that is that's a fraud. It is an assault upon our American way of life, because the outcome-based education's end game is socialism, and that's what our children is being taught, and they're making them very, very prejudiced against conservatism, and even that has its problems too, conservatism. But it's where basically we do find a lot of the truth on that side of the bar, so to speak. The thing is that we need to give our children a good foundation and an understanding of our government, which includes the judiciary as much as the political side of things, and, of course, the legislative part, to understand the Constitution and how the court system works, how the political process works, how to have consent of government on the political side of things and on the judicial side, and therefore control over our entire government. Our children need to learn these things, and they also need to learn a sense of responsibility and owing back to society to be blessed to be in a nation of liberty. And therefore, every child at some point in their life, when they grow up, needs to appreciate the fact that they should become a committee man at least once in their life. And if they want to be more than that, that's fine too, but once in your life. And they need to be taught to respond when called to be a jurist. Whether it's to sit on the grand jury trial.
It's not only the schools, though, because our media has distorted the hell out of the thinking process. It's not even close. I mean, if at least there are Republicans and Democrats they're thinking, but that's not the real fight anymore either. It's globalist and nationalist is really what's going on. And it's a lot to pick up. But let me just pause and say I've given you three additional paths to complement your book effort. So put that reputation out there. And, if you know
hopefully,
David Barton, he can get you connected to all three of them.
Look, hopefully we get when I get the book done, hopefully people in their counties will buy at least one or two books themselves and give one to their sheriff. Okay?
Yeah.
Every they'll believe in a book, okay? They have a problem believing our papers because they don't know how to read them, but the book teaches and trains me. They're not going to go to a lawyer to read a book. You know, they're going to take the book and hopefully read it. And if they and let me tell you something, you see, if we bring back the control of the people of the committee man process, and we bring back control of the people of the judicial process, okay, now we've controlled every election district in America. Think about that. You know, there's a committee man in every single election district, okay? And for instance, in my county, total county, I think it's 249, or maybe 349, I think it's 249 election districts in my entire county, okay? That means there's 249 committeemen, okay? One for each election district, representing their election district, an important position. That gives the opportunity, the committeemen work with the people in the administration together, you know, because one's dealing with the judicial and the other one's dealing with the political. They both have the same focus, and that is to bring a government under the control, under the chains of the Constitution. That's the key. We can then start to work on campaigns, because we have people in every election district then. We can then work on campaigns to train the people or teach the people and convince the people, you know, through different activities to get involved, to learn, okay? And we have the ability on that kind of a grassroots level, okay? We have the ability to go into all the schools and make sure they're teaching a solid constitution. I believe there is a federal law. It could be a state law, but I've never looked at it myself, but I know someone who was involved and told me about this. And that is that there is a requirement to teach the Constitution and civics in school, and yet they're not doing it. Now, if it's federal, now hopefully it is federal, then it's a lot easier to apply. But look, it's a matter of convincing the people and bringing the schools back to the people, getting, you know, where the parents come in and talk with the school board and make the arguments and debates and say, no, we want our children. The parents need to decide on what their children are being taught, what the big focus. I mean, of course, all the basics need to be taught all our children. But, you know, certain areas will have more of an influence in this direction or that direction, and it's up to the parents to decide what their children are being taught. And they need to be taught, of course, the truth and how to think, morality.
I absolutely agree with you. And I've listened to you more than once, although not that often. And these three venues, all I've done is give you three paths to really amplify your message and increase your membership.
Well, appreciate that. Thank you. All right.
Well, I'm done. That's good.
Thank you. I was going to try to take another caller, but we're after 12, and I really don't want to stay up too much later. I got to get up in the morning, so we'll have to end it. Those are in the queue. You can join us back next week, and get in the queue early. You'll be right up front. Although it's been
I'll send an email to you and Jan, and just kind of stay in touch. I'm already a member, and I've got to check on my credit card being processed. But anyhow, it's in there. Okay, well, you have a good night, and good morning now.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, John.
Thank you. With that, we're going to say goodnight, everybody. Appreciate everyone coming. Lord willing, we'll be here next week. And again, those in the queue, try to get in early, and we'll get your questions or your comments up. And again, look it, we got to get out there and learn. If people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. So let's go do what we got to do. Even if you don't get active now in other things, get the knowledge now. And later on, hopefully, you get active. And you figure out how active you want to get and where you want to get active in. All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming.